Let's dance.
Let's dance. Put on your red shoes. Dance the blues. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy for a Tuesday show. Hey, Ryan, Wendy wants to pay you a compliment, a well-deserved compliment.
Oh, yeah?
I was listening to your news.
Thank you.
That's it. That's your
it.
Compliment.
It was great.
I enjoyed when you were talking about the Hawks game and the debate, and you said don't get your canes mixed up. I enjoyed that.
That was great.
Spelling is a little different.
Right.
Okay. By the way, yeah.
But unless that's the only difference, yeah. Really.
Don't you want your VP to score 50 goals a season?
Yes.
I would.
That would help.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Take down those Canadians.
It all depends on Artemi Panarin and how much he helps out, I think.
And Jalmerson will not be helping out because he will be benched for a while.
He's going to be benched for a little while.
A dirty
Swedes,
hit.
I tell you.
Can I tell you a crazy story?
Please.
Want to hear a crazy story? When I was leaving for work this morning, one of my neighbors, Chuck, who lives across the street and down a house, I don't say kitty corner because I'm an adult. If I was a young person, I would say kitty corner.
I never use that.
I don't either. Even when I'm talking about kitties on a corner, I will not say kitty corner.
And I don't like catty corner either, and I've heard people use that.
I don't know how they decide at the last minute to say that instead of kitty corner. Both are ridiculous.
I agree with you.
So Chuck lives across the street and down one house. And he came running over. He's very excited. And he goes, do you have a minute? And of course I have a minute for my neighbor. Yeah, I have a minute.
Even in the morning when you're on your way to work?
Well, that's where the problem began because I time it such that I get here roughly the same time. And even a couple of minutes late, you know, could be disastrous for the show, you know.
So yeah, because I'm always here to get your back.
Right. Absolutely. So he said, did you see the Tribune on Sunday? And I did see the Tribune, but I didn't read it in depth. I just kind of glanced over it. I said, Chuck, I got to be honest. I did not see the Tribune on Sunday. He said, it turns out my dad is responsible for the Cubs curse. I said, I don't think that's possible, is it? He said, no, it is possible. They did a piece about the Billy Goat curse at Wrigley Field on Sunday.
Is his dad Sam Sianis?
His dad is not Sam Sianis, but his dad is the Andy Frayne usher who would not allow the goat to come into Wrigley Field.
Really?
And he said his dad had told him a version of the story years ago, but he didn't realize how honest it was. He thought his dad, you know, how your dad every once in a while will just tell you something. You go, oh, there's my dad just right. Telling a story that didn't possibly happen.
Isn't that sad that no one believes their dad's stories or their grandfather's?
Yes.
They believe the grandmother and the mom more than the dad and the grandfather.
I would tell you that throughout my life, if my mom told me a story, I would bank it. I would go, oh, I bet that happened. But if my dad told me a story, I'd walk away and go, he really thinks I believe that. Come on. There's no way. So there's a picture of his dad in the paper saying to Mr. Sianis, Sam Sianis, the owner of the Billy Goat, and his goat, we don't allow those kind. You can't bring a goat in Wrigley Field, sir. Please, be on your way.
Unless he has a ticket.
Yeah, if he had a ticket, he could come and see the game. So, and they didn't have StubHub back then, you know that. That's a modern invention. So he said, my dad, he wanted to run and get the paper, and I said, Chuck, I want to see it. He's going to come over after the show today and show me the paper.
Oh, that'll be fun.
I can't wait to see it. But imagine knowing that your father is the guy that I don't think there's a curse on Wrigley Field. I don't think there's a curse on the Cubs. They've just had 108 bad seasons. That's all. It's not a curse.
That's all.
Coincidence. Anyone could have a bad century. Come on. But imagine like living a life now knowing your dad, for people who do believe in that curse, that your dad was the perpetrator of that curse, the man who said no to a goat. You can't come into a game. You goat out. Now, the White Sox today, you could bring 1,000 goats. They just want to fill the stadium. Bring all the goats you can find.
It's hurtful. You're right, though.
It's true. It's true.
Well, that is pretty impressive.
I think it's very impressive.
Now, did your neighbor, Chuck, believe his dad prior to seeing it in print?
He said to me, I knew he probably had some involvement, but you know how dads are prone to exaggeration?
Yes.
So if your dad said to you, I'm the reason that there's a curse, you go, oh, okay. And then you go, probably not. He knew his dad was an Andy Frayne usher. He knew he was working around the time of the actual curse.
But he still didn't believe him?
But the picture shows his dad. Now, I haven't seen it, so I don't know exactly how specific it is. But he said, there is my dad in the picture, named by name, saying no to Sam Sianis and his goat. Thus began the quote-unquote curse.
Huh.
How about that?
That's pretty impressive.
I know. I think it is. I mean, it is a nice piece of history, but for a lot of Cubs fans, it's a very negative piece of history. Like, for instance, for my family and I, we now have to move. I can't live across the street and down a house from a man whose dad caused the Cubs curse.
Well, wait to see how they do.
Right.
If they win,
right,
then you can stay there.
Right.
If not, you can move to another country.
Right.
For many reasons.
I guarantee you, I think this happened last year, too. Somebody will try to bring a goat to Wrigley Field as they get deeper into the playoffs and into hopefully the World Series. Because that's a novelty to go, remember the last time this happened and it didn't pay off? Let's make it work this time. Didn't somebody travel like miles and miles and miles and miles with a goat last time?
Well, that was just for fun.
Oh, man.
Can I tell you my goat story?
No.
Do we have enough time?
Yeah.
Okay. I lived in Memphis for a while, and the man who ran and operated Silky O'Sullivan's, which is on Beale Street, famous Beale Street.
Yeah.
It's a fun place to hang out. He was a big Cubs fan, and when I moved and I got a job in Chicago, he said, I need you to do me a favor. He actually, as part of the bar, they've got goats that kind of walk around, and they've got this little like area you can walk up. He shaved part of the goat and gave me some of the goat hair and said, I need you to sprinkle this onto Wrigley Field. So this would have been like 2005. So, all right, Silky, whatever, you know. So I did it. I brought the bag of hair into Wrigley Field. Went there during batting practice. This was not a good year for them. This would have been after the Bartman thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I got up close during batting practice to the bullpen side on the first base side, and I unleashed the bag, and there were people who were watching me like, what the heck is this guy doing? No kidding. The wind picked up right at that moment, and the hair blew all over everybody.
Oh, no.
That was sitting in like the first two or three rows behind us, and it ended up blowing over. So I apologize to Silky, and unfortunately, that did not break the curse, as far as I know.
Oh, no. That's terrible. You tried, Ryan.
Silky passed, by the way, a few years ago, so he's no longer with us.
That makes the story even sadder.
Yeah.
I think the Bears are cursed. That's what's cursed.
All right, I got to get some bear hair now.
That shouldn't be difficult. Imagine, though, what a time we must have lived in when a guy could think that I'll just bring my goat to a game. I'm sure they'll let him in. Like today, let's say you had a goat in this year, in 2016. Would that even cross your mind to think, yeah, I can bring a goat to a baseball game, can't I? There's no problem with that.
Yeah, I don't get the whole origin of this.
There's been a long history, though, of sacrificing goats, if you look into the Bible. So
it's funny, when you look at, and I'm sure you've seen this, you look at audiences, you look at the crowd, whenever there was a game, like in the 1940s, and everybody there is wearing suits.
There's
hardly any women. There's like one or two women. It's all guys wearing suits.
And hats.
Nobody's wearing a T-shirt that says, try not to suck. There's not a single person wearing a T-shirt that says that.
So what do you
say? Or jerseys.
We should go back to those times?
No, I'm not saying we should go back to those times, because then I'd never see another baseball game.
I'd love to see you in a suit at a game.
But think about Prohibition. There was no beer sales.
Right.
Then. Think about that. You got that whole span of the 20s to the early 30s where they weren't selling beers.
Who wants one? What do you got? It's just elixir. Oh, yeah, I'll take an elixir. That'll be great.
An elixir?
The red one or the green one?
One for my goat, please. But now, I mean, if you see a picture of the crowd now, half the crowd is wearing Rizzo jerseys or Bryant jerseys. Nobody wore back then, nobody would wear a baseball player's jersey. Right. It was just a suit. That was it. That was your only baseball option.
When did you start noticing, by the way, Bill, the people wearing the jerseys at the ballpark?
When I was a kid, when we would go to games like in the late 60s and early 70s, there would be one every once in a while.
Like a family member?
Overabundance of them. But yeah, like somebody somehow got a jersey, but it wasn't even a replica jersey. Somebody would say to Joe Pepitone after a game, can I buy your shirt, Mr. Pepitone? And I guess he would sell it.
Or just throw it to him.
Yeah. Yeah. But now like half the crowd, and it shows team spirit, which is a good thing, but it's just funny to see the juxtaposition of the 1940s baseball crowd to today. It's completely different.
Totally. And a listener has a great idea, Ryan. You had mentioned getting some bear hair at Soldier Field to break that curse. Someone suggested Ryan could sprinkle some of Erlacher's new hair on Soldier Field.
I thought they were going to go the Ditka route, but yeah, Erlacher would work.
Beautiful. Yeah. That's a beautiful idea. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more show for you. Jump in at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. Rick Kogan wrote this article in the Tribune, and I do not have a picture, and I cannot find Chuck's dad's name in the story.
Oh. I don't know if I should give his last name because there could be some overzealous Cubs fans.
Dude, anybody who has the Tribune can look at it.
Yeah, I guess.
You've already given too much information.
I guess.
You would be a bad Secret Service.
The worst in history.
Hey, let me tell you something.
Right.
Well, we were talking about the curse of the goat and Bill's neighbor who lives across the street in one house over.
Chuck.
His dad was really responsible for not allowing the goat in, which someone has texted and said the goat did have a ticket.
All right, that's been a point of contention for years as...
It cost him $3.
Yes. Yes. People have said the only reason the Cub management wouldn't let the goat in is because the goat did not possess a ticket. But I have to think there's some other rule in baseball that says you just can't bring livestock into a Major League Baseball game. Can you? Could I bring let's say I had a prized cow who loved the Cubs. Could I just bring the cow to the baseball game and say, my cow loves the Cubs, watched all season long. You can't say no to my cow.
A cow's a little big, and you'd have to bring a trailer. I mean, there are signs, no shoes, no shirt, no service, but
right.
It doesn't say no shoes, no shirt, no goat.
Right. Right.
I don't really know what the rules are on that.
I'm not sure. I don't think you can just bring an animal to a game, I don't think.
Well, the White Sox do have the dog day in the park or
yeah,
whatever that is.
That's a special day. That's allowed then.
When do they start goat day in the park?
Soon, I hope.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you feeling?
Good, I'm feeling great. A thought crossed my mind, could you bring in a service goat?
Oh, a service goat, yes.
Like a service dog.
Sure.
Who is a service goat?
You want to get a goat in, there's your chance.
The Bears have gotten our goat. Does that count for anything?
That happened a long time ago.
I know it did. I don't know how that works, but I think if you could prove to management that you absolutely need that goat to help you get through with any duties that need to be done, they can't deny you your goat, I wouldn't think.
No, so put this on your bucket list.
All right, it's on there.
Bill will not travel with a goat, I'll tell you that right now, to anywhere. You won't even take a goat to the zoo.
I will not travel with a goat. I will not travel by boat, by a boat.
Well, probably nobody will travel with you with a goat.
No, either. That's true. Well, thank you, Carrie. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
No, thanks. Bye.
You're welcome.
And the goat in question's name was Murphy.
The inspiration for Murphy's Bleachers, the bar right across the street from Wrigley Field, they tabbed onto that and named their restaurant or their bar
Genius.
After it. Yeah, very, very smart. I can't get a ticket for myself. Imagine trying to secure a second ticket for an animal.
You know what we should look into? Earlier this week, I had mentioned how much the tickets were going for standing room only for the Cubs game. Ryan, do you have that information? I have to look up current prices.
Don't. And this was playoff tickets or World Series tickets?
World Series.
Yeah.
It was like something crazy ridiculous, like $650 for standing room only.
Oh, no. It's way higher than that. Way, way higher.
Maybe it was 2,000. There were a couple numbers there.
I can't even imagine. Let's say, hypothetically.
4 days ago, it said it was about 2,000. That's where they started
at. For standing
room. That was 4 days ago, so
right.
I don't know what they are right now.
I would venture to say, I'm just taking a guess here, that if the Cubs make it not only into the World Series, but if it goes to a Game 7, although that Game 7 would not be in Chicago. The Game 7 would be in the American League field. We would get the middle three games, right? We get Games 3, 4, and 5 for the World Series, I believe. So I'm trying to think, if it's the last game at Wrigley in a potential clinching game, I guarantee you could get a decent seat. I'm going to say somewhere
for
around...
For less than your house?
Not by much. Not by much. I bet that there will be tickets sold somewhere that are around $100,000 for that game.
Oh, now, who in the world is going to pay that?
A lifelong Cubs fan who thinks this
who
is the only chance.
Who has that money?
I don't know. People spend money on crazy stuff. I bet somebody... Yeah, I could see it going in upwards of $100,000 for a clinching game here.
Well, at least all the aldermen are going. For the second straight year, all 50 aldermen and state lawmakers who represent Chicago districts have been offered the right to purchase 2 terrace, reserved, or upper deck tickets for each home playoff game at Wrigley all the way through the World Series.
That seems fair.
It does?
No.
Oh, I believe
not even
for
a little
a minute.
Bit.
Well, and actually, they take some of the seats away for us in the media, too, because we actually kind of take up I want to say, two sections in the upper left corner because there's just not enough room in the press box.
Right.
So they section off two of the sections. That's got to take away a couple hundred seats during these games anyways.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, this is 100 because 50 aldermen, they each get a chance for two tickets and state lawmakers, so add more to that. This perk comes 3 years after the city council gave the Cubs the go-ahead to rebuild Wrigley and develop the land around it.
So that was part of their trade-off?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
And despite the apparent conflict of interest, more than 70% of city council members have taken the Cubs up on this generous
sure.
offer. So less tickets to go around, obviously making these tickets $100,000.
That doesn't seem fair. That's a shady part of the deal. And this is Chicago. We don't do shady parts of deals. This must be a first.
Hotter ticket, that one or Hamilton?
Hamilton. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Ryan has the news, and then there's more show coming your way. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, good luck to the Cubs. I guess that doesn't hurt to say, does that?
Is that painful to say? I hope not.
It's not painful. I just wish the Sox had a better season.
That would have been nice.
I would like us, you know, we're still reeling from 2005.
Right.
But you know what? Would it be bad if both teams had a...
No.
A World Series under their belt?
Let it happen.
All right, so if you're talking about getting some seats, and this is a place called Vivid Seats. It's the first thing that popped up. Here are some prices for Friday night's game, October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And standing room only begins at $126. That's
very
not
affordable.
Bad.
Very affordable.
I know you have to stand.
Right. People, you know what, though? People stand at these games almost throughout the whole game anyway.
Right. Upper deck, about $180. That's doable.
That's not terrible for a playoff game.
And again, this is Friday night, and I think the highest price here would be Terrace... $303 a ticket. Still not outrageous.
Nope.
Can't you
bring
spend...
You could bring a family of four and enjoy the game for just over $1,200. That's not crazy.
I'm not talking about bringing the family. I'm talking about getting one ticket and driving yourself.
Although, you can't... Who would go to a game by themselves?
A lot of people. At these prices, Bill?
I guess you could go with a friend who would pay a similar price. Although, like, if you have the option on these, does it just say that's one single ticket, that's it? Although, if it's standing room, you can stand.
Well, they have a certain number of tickets. There were more than one.
All right. But I couldn't just go to a game by myself.
You can't do anything by yourself except go to the Happy Lobster truck.
Yeah, I do that by myself.
Do you go to movies by yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, what's the difference?
I don't know, but like part of
popcorn?
The game, part of the game is just sharing it with whoever's next to you, talking about the game and other things.
Yeah, but if you have fans sitting next to you, that's why I like going to games live.
Yeah.
Because you totally get along if you have good neighbors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The seat next to you, don't you high five everybody?
No high fiving. That's just for the players.
What?
No high fiving.
At a Hawks
He's
game?
Got the antibacterial right next to him. Ooh, a goal. That means I've got to put this on.
I don't get the high-fiving unless you're one of the players who's helped contribute to the actual game.
Oh, my God, you are so not fun at a game.
One of my friends had season tickets, and we would go to games quite often together. And he would high-five like on a foul ball. Hey, foul ball! You know, and I'd say to him, I'll go to the game with you, but you get one high-five for the nine-inning game. If it goes extra innings, you get an additional high-five.
Oh, that's decent of you.
Yeah. I threw in an extra high five, but it's so ridiculous. Guys just standing there high-fiving for every single thing that happens. One per nine innings, that's it. And even that one's, I give it grudgingly.
I don't know. I mean, Hawks games, you don't even high-five people sitting around you?
No. I will congratulate them and shake their hand. I will do almost anything but the high five. I'm just not.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
And then it's quick
peasants.
Contact.
It's for peasants.
You are so
the players, I get it. If you hit the home run, if you scored the goal, if you got the touchdown,
but
high five
fan.
All day. I can do it without high fiving. I don't like it. Should be illegal.
All right. Well, $300 top price for Friday's game.
Mm-hmm.
In the Terrace, I think I said, which isn't really bad.
No, that's not bad at all.
But you wouldn't go by yourself.
No, I couldn't go by myself.
What if somebody just said, we have a World Series ticket, front row. You want to go, but there's only one.
That's a tough one. So I know this guy or girl, And that, would I? Would they be sitting by
no.
me? They just have a ticket.
They have an extra ticket that their Aunt Marge couldn't go.
That's a tough call. I want to see the game so badly, but I would feel so lonely amidst all those people. I would just feel like an island.
You would not be even noticed. I mean, everybody would be in it together. You're there as a big fan field.
But I like to talk to people during the game.
So talk to your neighbor.
That guy should. They should get that guy out of here because he's not pitching well. You can't just do that to strangers.
You do not talk to your seatmates, people who sit next to you that you don't know.
I talk to the people I come to the game with. And every once in a while, there'll be, you know, maybe a quick exchange between a stranger and myself. But I don't go out of my way.
I usually make lunch dates with the people I sit next to.
I know you do.
And
I know you're not kidding.
And they high five all over the place. It's awesome.
I don't like it.
All right. Now, first World Series game to be determined at Chicago Cubs. Game 3, home game 1, if necessary. Friday,
oh, it's necessary.
Friday, October 28th. They start.
Wait, how could game 3 be if necessary? They're not going to call the World Series after two games. Is that just saying, if necessary, if the Cubs get in there?
Yeah, I guess maybe.
Is that what that means? Okay.
Standing room only begins at $1,500 a ticket, per ticket.
Yep.
Goes all the way up, and I can't even imagine this. Club box 19, $27,145 per ticket.
For
there are
one
four
ticket.
Available. Yes.
Wow, $27,000. And I'm telling you, it's going to get a lot higher because right now it's all... If the Cubs get that far, but when they get that far and it becomes a reality, then people are going to want to jump on it. So it's 27 now. It's going to go way up. And that's,
okay, that's game one.
That's game one.
Home game one. This is home game two.
Which is really game four in the series.
Yes. Again.
It's like the Star Wars numbers at the end of the Star Wars titles.
See, that
confuses me.
You've
got to go back and forward.
50,000 upper deck box per ticket.
Right.
By the way, that's the same cost as a year of tuition at Northwestern. So keep that in mind.
For one 3-hour game.
One 3-hour game is equal to 1 year of tuition at Northwestern.
That there's no guarantee they're going to win.
Right.
But that Northwestern education will get you so far.
Forever.
Yeah.
That's an upper deck box, 50 grand for game two.
Oh, man.
Club box 31, only 25,000. So two for one kind of deal.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to call that person and say, okay, so that $50,000, I'll pay it, but you have to include a Choco Malt. I would just say, I want one Choco Malt, and then I'll do it.
You're so weird.
Who would say no to that? Eh, sorry, sir, it's just for the ticket.
Game
the Choco Malt separate.
Game 5, home game 3, October 30th, the day before Halloween.
Yeah.
Tickets begin at $3,900.
That's your starting price.
Yeah, and that's terrace tickets, though. And then it goes all the way up to...
What's the highest? You just turned a weird color.
No, there is no... I can't be
is
reading this right.
Is it over 100,000?
It's 464,792
yeah,
for terrace 226, row 11 for game 5, home game 3. Who in... There are two tickets available. Should I put us down for these?
Why don't you put a hold on them, and we'll see.
Here, I'm just going to hit buy.
If
just
I
to
accidentally
make...
rob a bank between now and the end of October.
Yeah, $464,792 each, quantity 2. I am not putting my email address in, because what if all of a sudden, hello, Wendy Snyder.
How did they come up with the last part of it? What is it again?
464,792.
How'd they determine the 792?
I don't know how they determine anything.
You could buy 3 EpiPens for that. let's take a quick break. We'll talk to Bridget Carey in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy and WGN.
And Bill, it is Bill and Wendy. It is also a Tech Tuesday, and we have CNET senior editor Bridget Carey on the line with us. How are you, Bridget?
I'm doing good. Gearing up for a big Google event later today. It's going to start pretty soon.
Yeah, talk to us about that, because you kind of mentioned it last week that this was happening, but big Google event, what does that mean to all of us?
Well, it means Google is about to have a press event that unveils a bunch of new gadgets. And the truth the big picture here is that Google's always thought of as a software company, really. You don't always think of Google as doing hardware. And I think they're trying to change that conversation and show that they're serious about hardware. Sure, they have phones, but they don't make the phones. And they have things like the Chromecast. But you never think of them as cool and sexy when it comes to, like, oh, they make the hardware like Apple. And I think they're trying to kind of become their own little version of Apple. We are going to be seeing a new type of phone called the Pixel phone. And we know it's called the Pixel for sure now because Verizon just accidentally published a page where you could buy one.
So they,
a little early. And it's high priced. So it used to be that, oh, the Google phone's a cheap phone. Not anymore. And one of the features on that Verizon page said it came with Google Magic. I have no idea what that means, but maybe we'll learn what Google Magic is.
Is Magic capitalized?
They're calling it, like, it's one of the features, like the fact that it has a camera, it has this, it has that, it has Google Magic. I'm like, okay.
So
we'll have to see what that is. But they're also going to be focusing a lot on the home. Alexa and Amazon, that's been a hot product, and they're trying to make their own version. They call it Google Home. Something like a smart speaker you talk to. You ask questions. It can pull up music. It can pull up maybe – we'll have to see what it really can do to make it enticing compared to Amazon's product. And they also want to talk more about virtual reality because everyone talks about virtual reality lately, and they want to create something called Google Daydream. It's this headset, just like their cardboard headset, but probably souped up to be a little more snazzy and to work with that new phone that they made. And you're going to hear maybe more updates on the Chromecast. Some leaked reports say that their next version of their Chromecast, which is the thing you put in the back of your TV to get Netflix and stuff, that is going to be twice as expensive and have 4K. And I don't know if people really care when you have Rokus that are, like, so cheap now. So they'll have to really show why it matters that they're making this hardware and how it all works together.
Bridget, is this more of a threat to Amazon or to Apple or to both?
I think Amazon's making everyone nervous. And that's why Google's responding this way. I don't think Google's the threat to Amazon. I think Amazon's the threat to Google. And Google is going, whoa, we have to really, amp up our game here and show why it matters to kind of have everything in your life be Google because Amazon's Echo has really been like a smash hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well, and it's going to be the hot holiday gift, and they come really cheap at $50 now if you want one of those, speakers in the home. So I think everyone now is desperate to go, wait, look at us, the old tech people. We know Google, Apple, and Microsoft, they're kind of waving their hands about, hoping to, not have Amazon just kind of come out of nowhere and take away, all the attention.
I was telling Bill, my son Dylan ordered this 3D VR headset from Amazon. It was like, $20. It's not like top of the line. You put your iPhone in it, and the first thing he showed me was, we're big fans of Stranger Things. Do you watch that, Bridget?
That was a good series, yes.
And so you put your iPhone and you go to this app that it's the brand is AKALLY, Akali. I mean, it's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But you put your iPhone in a little iPhone holder and you put it on your head and it fits very comfortably and you look around and it's the exact set from Stranger Things. And
mm-hmm.
like you can look behind you, you can look down, you can look up. And then I said, well, this is $20, but this is all you're going to watch. He goes to YouTube and downloads these 3D VR things and he's been on roller coasters. It's pretty cool for $20.
That is the point at which people are going to get into VR, what you just described. It's these cheap headsets that you stick your current phone inside. So the headset's just a plastic, it's cardboard, it's whatever it's made of, and it fits into with the phone in the front. And what the phone screen is doing, you're looking at the phone screen, but it splits it into two images, a left eye and a right eye, and that's why it looks three-dimensional, because you're seeing something that's a little off. And they have more cameras now that people are using who make YouTube videos that, shoot with the left eye and the right eye separate, and that way it creates these videos that your son pulled up on YouTube so you could see things in 3D. There are two different flavors of VR going on right now. That is the one that consumers are going to be able to kind of understand, have some fun with at home, very casually. The high-end virtual reality, the stuff that PlayStation's working on, that Facebook's Oculus is working on, that kind of stuff is like a whole system you need and a high-end computer to run it. And I don't think a lot of people are going to really invest in that right away until they kind of understand it on the easier, side.
Bridget, I just picked up one of these GAF ViewMasters. Have you seen these things? You can see.
Click.
You joke, but ViewMaster, the company, made this. The exact same thing. They made it for kids.
I know.
ViewMaster.
They know what they're doing. How come in the ads for these virtual reality sets, they rarely, if ever, show you what you're seeing when you're wearing it? They show you somebody enjoying it, a bunch of people enjoying it and moving around and loving it, but they don't show you what you're seeing inside. Does it not do it justice when you're seeing it on a flat screen?
It doesn't do it justice. Yeah. No. I mean, like, it just looks like a regular video, right? I think the point is that it looks kind of like you could see a little depth perception, when you're actually using it yourself. And it's the kind of thing that I don't like using for long periods anyways. I rather have the more casual experience, at least for just these cute little videos, because you can kind of get an eye headache a little bit. It depends on, your tolerance for this sort of thing. And that's what the big gaming systems are hoping to, get so smooth and so better that you don't feel that, and you could play a full game with them for longer. But with these phone ones that you just put on your, a little headset on your face and stick your phone in, I can't last too long with them.
No, but it is pretty cool. I just don't know how long I would be able to be involved in it because, man, just having that thing on and, again, having my 13-year-old watch me because he's like, Mom, there's a pop-out. Get ready, He was just staring at me, watching me. But I could see where you could totally lose your sense of reality because you are just completely in this thing.
And they're looking at this for education, too. Imagine talking in class about
the planets,
a major battlefield or something. And then, okay, everyone pull out your Google Cardboards, pull out your whatever headset, and everyone just kind of puts it on. And like, oh, look, it's like you're there on the planet,
it's
on whatever,
cool.
So, yeah.
And amusement parks are now using them on some roller coasters. I know here in Chicago at Great America, They have a ride where you, as you're going through the roller coaster, you put on a virtual reality headset and it immerses you in a different world. That's kind of cool too.
Good for them. I think I'll pass.
That's too much. Yeah.
It sounds like it's gonna make me nauseous.
All right.
And real quickly before we go, I've seen a lot of people create their own groups on Facebook, like Moms of Clarendon Hills selling used things.
I'm on one of those groups in my neighborhood,
Especially with a new baby, sometimes you want to buy some stuff like, whatever, a bouncy chair or something. So people are making their own groups, but now Facebook is jumping on board, trying to take on Craigslist a little bit.
Okay, so right now, if you wanted to buy and sell used stuff on Facebook, you had to join a group, like you said, and you had to get approved to even be in the group, so like the administrator had to let you in. Now, as of yesterday, they opened it up to this thing called Marketplace. Anyone can buy and sell without being in a group. And so you could sell your car, your couch. You just can't sell your dog. No pets.
Yeah.
And no guns and things like that. But, you could sell anything. Buyer beware. If you have to, it'll tell you who's nearby selling, that like used couch, but you have to arrange it with a private message on how you want to pay, how you want to pick it up. So, they're kind of taking on eBay and Craigslist there a little bit, because they're just so big. They're like, hey, just, post it here. Everyone can see it. Of course, it launched yesterday, and it didn't take very long for our reporters to find people selling some interesting things, like themselves.
What?
Someone was selling themselves as stripper services and such,
I could use some side money. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. What's wrong with that?
All right. Well, she is CNET senior editor Bridget Carey and host of the CNET Update. And thank you very much. What's coming up on the CNET Update today?
Well, in a few minutes, that Google event's going to start in like 3 minutes. So we're going to go over everything that happens.
Cool. Thank you so much, Bridget. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Take care.
Red back funnel web, blue ringed octopus, taipan, tiger snake, adabox, jellyfish, stonefish, and the poison thing that lives in a shell, the spicy when you pick it up. Come to Australia, you might accidentally get killed.
That doesn't sound good at all. Rusty Rich is sitting right over there, Wendy, a longtime friend of ours. I haven't seen you in 20 years.
It's 20 years.
That's insane.
It's 20 years.
Now, you guys did stand up together here in Chicago.
Yes.
And surrounding states.
Yes,
we did some colleges
here with
together.
This group called the Scared Weird Little Guys, and we toured a lot of colleges and stuff around and the states and Canada in those days. And I reckon we came on your show in the first few months of it.
At the Loop.
Oh, it was at the Loop.
Yeah,
I still have the T-shirt, Scared Weird Little Guys. What I thought was so cool about it is the logo was like butt level. There was something on the front, and then the logo was in the back to cover my butt. So I thank you for that.
How is it that you guys look even younger than back then?
It's a miracle,
then,
isn't
seriously.
It? Well, it's a testament to how poor your eyesight has become over the years. That's what it is. I will say this. Of all the people I've ever played blackjack with, you are the most fun. We did that. We were working in Minnesota together, and after we went to a casino afterwards. So when you play blackjack with Rusty and his then teammate John,
yes,
they would count the cards. Like when the dealer was putting the cards down, and whenever he would bust, you would yell 1,000, and the dealer would hate that.
I don't understand that.
He would yell, all right, so he'd be counting cards, and Rusty and John would go 17, 12. 19, 23,000, and the dealer would beg you to stop doing that. It's fun to irritate the dealer at a blackjack table.
Don't they punch you or shoot you or
it
something?
It came close.
We survived. That's the reason why we're not together anymore.
Now, talk about the reason you're in Chicago, because I can't believe you're doing this.
Okay, I'm here in Chicago to run the Chicago Marathon on Sunday.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
But you're no stranger to this. You've done marathons all over the world.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I only got into it as an old person. Once I turned 40, I started doing marathons because that's what you do.
And I got a tattoo.
This will be my ninth marathon. Yeah, I went 4 years ago. I went to Antarctica and ran a marathon.
And that is the subject of a book you have written.
Yes, Scared, Weird, Frozen Guy.
What possesses you to do this? Because it is like once you do one, you say, I'm doing it to prove I can do it. But once you get up into these sevens, eights, and nines.
Well, here's the thing. They're awful, awful things to do. Marathons.
Grueling.
They're horrible.
Yeah.
Not enjoyable at all, any part of it.
Yeah.
I enjoy the goal of it and the training. And afterwards, I like the fact that you have to go to a very difficult place and do a difficult thing. That's a good thing about it. At the time, it's awful. That final hour that you're running is hard. It's hard. But most of our lives are pretty easy, really, and we don't do difficult things. And I like that. You make yourself do that, and that's kind of a good thing.
When you say you go to a difficult place, do you mean mentally during the race?
Yeah, I mean, it hurts. And your brain is saying, the logical part of your brain says, what are you doing? Stop. You're not an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, just walk. And the other part of your brain's going, come on, man, you can do it. You've done the training. It's going to be fine. And your other brain's going, shut up. Just walk. This is wrong. And there's that battle going on.
Yeah, constant.
But once you get through that, it's fine in the days afterwards.
Well, what do you benefit from that? Just knowing that you achieved this goal?
I think it helps in many situations in life when I've done that and I went to that difficult place, and it sets you in a good place for many other.
Mm-hmm. I try to avoid those difficult places, quite honestly.
There's always escape routes, right? What sort of training? Because people say you can't just get up and run 26 and some odd miles, 26.2 miles.
No.
You have to train for this. Have you been intensely training?
I've been doing it like a 4-month training program. I run usually 3 or 4 times a week normally. And then all you really have to do is increase one run a week. Say on the weekend, you start doing longer and longer. So you go, you might be doing 8 miles as you're long, and then you increase that by a mile each weekend.
Yeah.
Until the longest one you'll do is about 20 miles, 33 Ks.
How many pairs of gym shoes are you going through?
I have about 8 that I do on a rotation.
Do you really? Yeah. And do you, is there a specific goal that you have on this particular marathon? Is there a certain time
Not
limit?
Anymore. I used to aim for 4 hours as the time, and I broke that 4 times on my first 4. And then now I do about 4:05, 4:10, but it's much nicer if you don't have
Just to finish,
I'm
going to
do this, and if it's, I walk a bit fine, and I'm just going to experience your beautiful city. Look at this view you have.
It's pretty
great. People of Chicago walk around and look up occasionally because that's amazing.
Stop texting and look up.
It's incredible. Look at these buildings.
I know.
Here.
It's insane, isn't it?
Holy heck. What
it
a
really
city.
Is beautiful. There's no doubt about it.
Now, we had a comic in here from Australia, and I can't remember his name.
Monty Franklin.
Right.
This was a month ago.
Yes.
So you had talked to him off the air about Rusty and weird, strange, weird little guys.
I just in passing said, hey, there are some guys I used to work with from Australia, John and Rusty, do you know them? And he said, yeah, I do. I think they don't work together anymore. And he told me your history. And then 40 minutes later, out of the blue, you call us here at the station.
So here's the lead up to that phone call, right? I know I'm coming to Chicago, and I love Chicago, and I love the Blackhawks. I'm very excited about it. I'm going to see the Blackhawks tonight.
Nice.
Awesome.
I'm really, really excited. And I remember, so I'm one, like about 4 years ago, I'm listening to WGN, the broadcast online of the Blackhawks game. And up pops your photo, you two. Bill and Wendy show. I go, holy heck, they're still on the air there. Oh my gosh,
they're
look
still
at them.
Fooling the people of Chicago.
So I'm thinking, I'm coming to Chicago. I'm going to give them a call, right? So see if I can catch up and see you and catch up on old times.
Amazing.
And I look. But when your time on air, 10 to 3, is in Melbourne time, in Australia where I live, 1 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Oh.
So I'm never awake. Who's going to be awake? How am I going to listen to that? So I'm meaning to call up. I'll listen. I'll call up. But I'm not doing it. Finally, right? A month ago, I'm driving my wife to the airport. It's 4:30 in the morning. I think I can listen to WGN. So I get the app on and I'm listening. And you're talking about like releasing pigeons at weddings or something like that. I'm going to call up. So I call up. And I'm just too late. Who's your producer who's on?
Kevin.
Kevin blanks me. He says, "Nah, sorry, dude, we're finished talking about that now." I said, "Man, look, I used to work with Bill 20 years ago." He says, "Hold on a sec."
Yeah.
He puts me through, and then that's when we have the chat.
But Kevin came out here and said, there's a guy, Rusty, who's a comic that you used to work with from Australia, and you thought Kevin was pulling your name.
I was sure he was kidding.
Your leg.
Positive he was
because
kidding.
Because we just had Monty on.
Yeah, and I'm serious, 40 minutes earlier, I'm talking about you, and then out of nowhere, the phone call comes in.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It is really wild.
I assume there's some Australian gag network where if one Australian comic is in on a joke, they call another and say, here's one that'll pay off.
We have a little leg thing attached to your leg that vibrates. Okay,
yes.
Someone's talking about me.
Yes.
In Chicago. Hey, can I tell you a story?
Please. Oh, wait. Let's take a quick break.
All right.
Let's take a quick break. Rusty Rich is here all the way from Australia. He's in to run the Chicago Marathon. You're not even doing club dates this time, right? You're not working on any comedy clubs.
Didn't
just
even
running.
Bring a
That's
guitar
it.
Or anything.
That's it. All right. So we'll take a quick break and then more stories with Rusty Rich. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder and Rusty Rich is here, a longtime friend of ours, stand-up comic from Australia, in town this week for the Chicago Marathon, which is this Sunday. Are you looking forward to Sunday or are you dreading Sunday?
No, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I think it'll be good. I'm over here at a big group. There's my brother and about 14 of his kind of workmates.
And they're all running it along
yeah.
with you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's going to be so nice.
How long is that going to take you, ballpark?
I reckon
four hours
I'm aiming for, roughly.
Yeah. That's not bad at all.
Can't you think of 4 hours you can spend doing something else?
There's other things to do, but...
A good tour of the city. I figure I can do the bus tour, open bus, or I could do the marathon. I'll get to see quite a few neighborhoods.
At your own time, that's probably a better way to do it.
It is better.
Okay.
Tell us the story.
I've got a story for you. Are you still into collecting things?
Yeah, toys and action figures
so this
and memorabilia.
Is the thing we have in common, right? And I've been collecting a lot of old, Simpson stuff and from even in those old days. Now, back then in the early 90s, this South Australian brewing company released Duff Beer. They made their own actual Duff Beer, and then they got promptly sued by the Simpsons, and they had to stop it. Well, as soon as I heard that, I went out and bought 4 cases of it.
Did you? Right? Yeah.
And it still sells on eBay for like $50 to $100
a
tin. Okay. So my next trip over, I brought with me an unopened can for our agent to give to you. Now, Susan was our common agent.
Yeah.
And I gave it to her. So you got to give this to Bill. I know I won't get to see him. He's going to have this and he'll have it a memento of our friendship and he'll think of me every time, right? And then I caught up yesterday with Susan.
Uh-huh.
And she says, oh, my God.
She still has it.
I still have that Duff beer can. I never gave it to Bill Leff 20 years later.
She
says, I think I still have it in my garage, right?
I think if I remember it, it looks like exactly like the logo from The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's a yellow tin.
Yeah.
So anyway, after lunch, we drop by. She says, I'll have a quick look. So 40 minutes later, she comes out with this tin
look at this.
Of Duff beer and a ton of, and that's
it's
for
sensational.
You after 20 years
a tin we here
it.
In the States call it
a can but I know it
yeah
and we'll take a picture of you with it.
This is stunning, thank you so much.
It only took 20 years.
Isn't that fun?
That makes it even better.
Don't open it and drink it. I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think it's going to be good.
Do you, because I know you have, like you said, it's the same illness I have, which
yes.
is you see stuff you want and then you try to buy it.
Yeah.
When you come to the States, does it just dazzle you, all the different memorabilia and collectibles that we have everywhere? They're everywhere here.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, the high-end stuff I kind of steer away from. I like your Daggy. I'd rather go to a toy store and look at the bargain bin and get little things like that that I couldn't get in Australia.
Any particular, you said Simpsons stuff, is it toys from all
Simpsons
over?
Simpsons is my main thing that I
love
got
the
into
Simpsons.
Early days, all that. You know, then when all the first Toy Story stuff came out and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I have a lot of that early stuff.
You know, here in Chicago, there was a show on called The Magic Door that I was on for two seasons. And I replaced is Dan Castellaneta. He was on it before me.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So he got the job on the Tracy Ullman show, and he left Chicago to go and do that. And I'll never forget the producer saying to me, "You're going to be replacing Danny Castellaneta." And I said, "Where did he go?" And she goes, "Out to seek his fortune on the Tracy." And she goes, good luck to him. Like, that one, like, that'll never pay off. But he's done okay.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
He's done kind of okay.
So that was a good stepping stone for him. What happened to you?
He's got a great radio career and back with the best partner ever.
Yes. Those were the exact words I was going to say, Rusty. It's everything I've always wanted and more. Well, when you decided, when you and John decided, because I know you guys were very successful in Australia, and all of a sudden you decided, let's try it in the States. Were there major adjustments that needed to be made?
The one main difference to performing here, obviously we're all speaking English, but it's the accent. It's our accent.
Yeah.
And we speak fast, and we had to really slow down to speak to the crowd, noticeably to ourselves. Because we grew up in Australia hearing American accents.
Sure, on television.
Movies and TVs. Yeah. But that's not so much, you know, here. The Australian accent is still reasonably, you know, foreign to your ears. So that was the single biggest difference performing here. And obviously you put the local references from Australia, you get rid of them, but you can replace them often with other things. But the accent was the biggest difference.
Well, because we're not used to hearing it, so you have to pay more attention. So I guess that would be a problem. Do you like Vegemite?
Sure.
Who doesn't? Like it. I tried it. It's like just
use it very sparingly.
That's what it's I keep subtle. Hearing.
It for people who don't know what it is, aside from being in a Men at Work song, where would we find it and what does it do?
It's a breakfast spread.
Yeah.
Made. It's a yeast and vegetable extract, very black and very,
you had
very
me
salty.
At yeast. I want in.
The
it's
most
very
common
salty.
Way, to have it is very just a tiny little dab of it on buttered toast.
Yeah.
The World Market has it if you
oh,
want
they
to
do.
Try
I've
yeah,
seen
you
it.
Yeah, you should
there.
Try
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they do. Now, when Monty was in a month ago, also an Australian comic, we were talking about television and the differences between Australian television and American.
Yeah.
And I said, when I was a kid, there was a show that I used to watch that was Australian in origin, and it was about a kangaroo named Skippy.
Skippy the bush kangaroo.
And when I brought it up, he got so excited that someone in America also experienced what he did. And we watched a clip. Wendy found a clip on YouTube, and we were amazed at how god-awful it is. Because it was. I mean, it
doesn't
was.
Make any, it makes as much sense as Flipper, right. As a dolphin going, and they go, oh, what? There's a sunken treasure? How many guys are there?
Right.
But the noise that the kangaroo, Skippy the bush kangaroo made was, and this little kid would go, oh, Skip, is there something in the trouble, mate? And he'd go,
he would click.
I don't think kangaroos make any noise at all.
It was
Morse
code.
Helicopter crash.
I have it. I have Skippy.
Here it is. Listen how beautiful
the
beginning.
Listen. That's it.
So kangaroos don't actually make that noise.
Do I've never. You rarely get close enough to a kangaroo to hear it make a noise.
Because they can be mean with those feet. They
that's what everybody says. That they have a terrible temperament.
I don't think so.
They're not?
There's a lot. I live in the bush outside of Melbourne now, 2 hours, and I see kangaroos all the time. And they usually, they stop and they look up. If you get a bit close, they just gently hop away.
Is it a strange, because I can't.
We have squirrels that we see in the yard.
That's
much smaller.
I can't imagine the phenomenon of seeing something the size of a kangaroo just walking around.
Yeah, well, this is up not on a street. Although sometimes, you know, they come into yards and stuff.
They
like
do.
In your backyard, but no, I see them up sort of, you know, tracks.
They're
and
cute.
Tracks. Yeah, they're beautiful.
I only see
amazing.
Them in Disney cartoons.
I see them all the time. I still get excited seeing a kangaroo there or a koala.
Koala bears are the cutest thing ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a sweet little Facebook video going viral where this woman who works at a zoo or something is just cuddling with a koala bear, and it's just nuzzling. It's the cutest thing ever.
Well, now if we keep this Australian string alive, yes, that started with Rusty, with Monty Franklin, yeah, and now goes to you, is Hugh Jackman going to call us in 40 minutes I'm and say we really want to come on the show?
Sure. We have a very nice silent network going between the Australians here, and they'll know. He'll know that he's been talked about.
Yeah. Right. All right. Good. We'll love to have Monty.
Why do you like the Blackhawks? I'm proud and I'm happy to share. Okay. And you're going to the game tonight.
So we used to tour a lot in Canada and the States. This is, you know, over 20 years ago, and I just got into ice hockey. I love the game. And wherever we would go, I would try and see an NHL game. And I was with some friends, and we walked into a store. They said, "You're going to have to pick a team." And I looked at all the hats, and I went, "Oh, I looked at the Penguins. Yeah, that's all right. What's that Canucks here? Who's that cool-looking red and black one with the Indian hand?" They said, "That's the Blackhawks from Chicago." I said, "That's my team."
Just so, based on the logo.
Yeah,
that was
and the
all
name.
You
I loved it. Yeah. And I, you know, like Chicago. So I've got to see them quite a few times over the years. I went to the old Chicago Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And the third last ever game, and saw the Blackhawks. Now, in the days of Roenick and Ed Balfour, and my favorite player, Steve
Larmer,
the Iron Man Larmer.
Yeah, quite a player. Yep.
His streak will never be broken.
You know, a block and a half away is the Blackhawks store.
I was there yesterday.
Oh, you've already
that's
been.
That's why he has a. Is that a new Blackhawks?
That's a new Blackhawks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory for Blackhawks fans.
Hooking up for tonight.
It's so good to see you again.
Hey, great 20, to see
I can't
you.
Believe it's been 20 years. You look exactly the same. I don't know
so
how
you.
You're pulling that off. The best of luck on Sunday, Rusty.
Thanks.
Really. And can we push your book a little bit? Because you've
sure.
written at least one, and may, actually more books, right?
Yeah, I have that book there, which is the running in the Antarctic. It's about a midlife crisis guy getting into running, and it's quite a lot about that. And it's available as an ebook. It's called Scared, Weird, Frozen Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And my surname of that is Rusty Bertha. It's by. And I wrote another book called What and Give Up Showbiz about bad comedy gigs.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, that's
that
great.
I have to give to you.
Hey, are any of the ones we work together written about
know
in the
if
book?
I made it in.
Oh, it's possible.
It's for you.
All right, good. Great to see you. Knock 'em dead on Sunday.
Thanks, man.
Do you have a website or something you want to promote?
Ah, nah, that's all
Look
right.
at him. I'm He's just coming in for a visit. How sweet is that?
Selfless. You're selfless.
I just love your town.
Perfect.
Love it.
Perfect. Great to see you. We'll take a quick break. Ryan has the news, and then there's a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Ryan, it's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and is it already the first Tuesday of the month?
Wendy, it is already the first Tuesday of the month, and Mike McNamara joins us on that first Tuesday every month to talk about the Midwest Independent Film Festival, which is always a treat, but tonight, things are a little different. We talked about this last year at exactly this time of year. You guys do something extremely different on this particular night. What is it, Mike?
Tonight is
Oops, hang on. There you go.
Tonight there we go. Okay, that sounds better. Tonight is one of our biggest nights of the year. This is our annual pilot showcase. And tonight we have 9 Chicago-made pilots, and we're going to give them to you in 90 minutes. It's a jam-packed lineup. And, I mean, these are all brand-new pilots that nobody has seen from some of the best talent all around Chicago.
Do me a favor, in case somebody's not aware of the terminology.
Yeah, where does it go from here?
Pilot means what, though?
So pilot is kind of a treatment for a TV show. It's kind of saying this is the first
like
episode
rough draft
of a tree.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, in a way. It's usually the first episode of a TV series. So you're saying pilot, okay, here's the first episode. Do you like it? Okay, well now buy 8 episodes of that or buy 13 episodes of that and then it goes to series. So
Every
you show
year.
A pilot to networks. And then if they say, hey, that sounds really good, then hopefully they produce it and you get to shoot the whole series.
Do we have a rough estimate, Mike, on approximately how many Hollywood sees every year and then whittles it down to maybe 15 or 20? Do we know, even a guess?
That's tough, but it's a very small percentage that actually make it through.
Yeah.
What's cool is now more than ever is the most vibrant time for television because there are so many outlets. You don't just have NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox.
Right.
Now you have
Netflix.
CISO, which Ooh, is NBC Digital's, this digital platform that you guys probably haven't heard of. You
yeah.
have Netflix, you have Amazon,
Hulu.
I mean, and there's countless others, and they all want original content. Not to mention you have all the History Channel and HGTV. You have so many other networks. So now TV Land, which actually has a Chicago-made series called Teachers on it. So you have all of these series, there's many more opportunities. That's why it's cool that we have 9 Chicago-made pilots that we're going to show you guys tonight. And I actually brought two of the pilot creators here with me. If you want me to introduce them?
Please.
So right over here, this is Namdi Ungwey, and he has a – and I said that like it's some –
like it's a
Namdi
dish,
Ungwey.
Yeah.
You said that.
But Namdi has a pilot called Julius that's a hilarious pilot, and he runs around I.O. in Second City, and we're going to be premiering that tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And then to his right is Pooja Mohindra, and she has a pilot called Gita's Guide to Moving On. And they're both awesome. They're actually going to be at the New York Television Festival later this month. It's
cool.
The premier pilot showcase in the country. And tonight we're going to show you all of the pilots from Chicago that are going to be in that showcase.
Outstanding. Guys, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. And congratulations. I know that even though everybody has it in the back of their head, I would love to try this at some point. It's a major undertaking, isn't it?
Oh, thank
yeah.
you. Thank
yeah,
you
thank
for
you.
Having us
yeah.
on.
And yes, it is a lot to balance, like from start to finish, from writing everything to getting everything, schedules in order to shooting, to editing everything else afterwards.
Finding
so.
locations is a big production. Yeah.
But
begging
it's,
for favors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that, isn't there?
Yeah. And like, what happens now? You show the pilot, somebody loves it. You got to get to work coming up with more. Do you have that in your head already?
Yes. I do. I definitely have thought about that. That'll be wonderful. But I constantly, I imagine you do the same, constantly just thinking of ideas for not just that, but just a bunch of other things I'd love to do, given the chance.
Can you tell us a little about Julius? What can we expect?
Yes. Julius is basically a service worker here in town, wins a competition to have his life on a reality show, and he's not the most not the best in social situations, and so we just kind of enjoy the awkward moments that he runs into.
It's based on somebody you know, is it?
A little bit of me in there. But I'm real good in social situations, but he's not the best. So
do you play Julius?
I am Julius. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So that's even another layer. I mean, it's one thing to write this and direct this, but then when you're also starring in it, that makes it even more twisted, doesn't it?
Yeah. So some friends have expressed that, you know, they feel that it's me. They feel a bit awkward, and I'm like, no, it's just a character.
I have to say that all the time too. Yeah. And next show, I've decided I'm not acting in it. It's much easier. Yeah. It's so much to handle. You might as well just stay behind the camera.
Yeah.
And Pooja, tell us a little about Gita's Guide to Moving On, and you got to talk right into that microphone. I will. Okay. Perfect. Thanks for the advice. It's about an Indian American girl who's madly in love with her Prince Charming, and he dumps her on the day of their engagement party. So she moves in with her Indian parents and learns to move on with the help of her family and her best friend. Not that it's inspired by true events.
No. Yeah.
We weren't going to ask you that.
Right.
I just love the look on Wendy's face when you describe
it. And my mom is starring in it.
Your mom's in it?
She's in it. And it didn't start out this way, but as it developed, I incorporated a lot more of my uncles and aunties and my Indian community that I'd grown up with. People just thought that they were so naturally funny, and we've never really seen them on screen. So now I really think they're the stars of the show. So they'll be there tonight at the...
Oh, really?
At the Landmark at the screening tonight.
Very All right, cool. Tell us about the screening tonight. What info do we need to know?
Tonight is jam-packed. So doors open at 6 o'clock at Landmark Century Center Cinema. So from 6 to 7:30, we kind of have our pre-show reception, and that is really going to be packed tonight. We're going to have a panel going on in the theater. We have a gentleman named Chris Parrish, who's a screenwriter. He was one of the screenwriters for The King of Queens, that Kevin James show on
Loved
CBS.
That show.
Also worked on Curb Your Enthusiasm. So he's going to be there. Deanna Cooper, executive producer, is going to be there. And PJ Fishwick, who's one of the executive producers of Teachers, they're going to be talking about pitching and packaging your pilot. So that's going to be happening from 6:30 to 7:15 in the theater. And then people are going to be drinking and having fun all around that. Then at 7:30 is when the pilot showcase starts. And again, we have 9 brand new pilots, including, you guys all know Dave Pesquazi and TJ Jagodowski, TJ and Dave. This pilot, it's a 12-minute pilot. It literally just got done being edited Friday.
Oh, wow.
So this is the first chance for anybody to see this pilot, including TJ and Dave. And that's one of the 9 pilots that we're going to be showing. After that, we'll have a Q&A with the filmmakers, and we'll party it up. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
So normally when they make a pilot for television, if a show is a half an hour, it's roughly 21 or 22 minutes. Mm-hmm. As you just mentioned, the one you just mentioned is only 12 minutes. You don't have to do a full length, right? You just give the gist of the idea for the most part, right?
Our show is for digital, I would say this is a web series, and our first show is about 6 minutes.
That's it.
I also want to just throw out, I mean, this is really not just the future, it's the present. This week, Issa Rae's show premieres on HBO called Insecure. It started as a web series. Mm-hmm. She shot it on her iPhone, and, you know, flash forward 3 years later, she's on HBO. And So this is, I feel like, the future of storytelling, the present of storytelling.
Shot it on her iPhone, really?
I met her. I used to live in LA. I moved back to Chicago to do this kind of work. And I ran into her in Santa Monica at the Santa Monica Pier. I'd just seen her second episode. It was shot on an iPhone. And she's been a huge mentor to me. But to watch this trajectory, and this year alone, so many shows that we see this season. The general public may not know it, but if you're kind of more in this world, if you know the history of some of these shows that we're going to be seeing, mm-hmm. they started as web series.
And
more Hollywood is finding content this way.
Let's take a quick break and then more discussion about tonight's pilot night for the Independent Film Festival. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Plenty of guests in the studio, Namdi Ungwe, Pooja Mohindra, and Mike McNamara. Am I saying that right?
That's
all here for the pilot night.
Good job,
Midwest
Bill.
Independent Film Festival.
All right, now pilots, we were just saying last week, I believe, with when we were talking about television, there's a lot to choose from now. There were crappy shows for a while, but now there's almost too much to watch. So you were talking about creating a web series, and you don't need approval. You can just put it out there right now on YouTube, correct?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Namdi's show is on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I think that the internet is not just about a American localized community. It's global and localized. So it's like we get to create shows about Chicago, showcasing Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if no one else is watching them. if even all of Chicago is watching, we have an audience.
Sure.
And that said, I had mentioned there's a lot of Indian American family stuff going on in Geetha's Guide to Moving On, and we hope that when we release our show that it will speak to people all over the world, South Asians, Asian Americans, and that's really looking at the global world as a full global audience, not just it'll be relevant to everyone around the world and accessible to everyone around the world.
And you don't need a network to pick you up. You already have these things out and going, but then if a network notices you guys are getting a lot of attention, mm-hmm. they're going to say, hey, you know what? Why don't you hop on board with us?
Yeah, because YouTube has the numbers and, you know, they track the eyeballs. So it's everything's in the numbers. And yeah, it's the most democratic time to be a storyteller.
Right, right. And another super, super cool thing about doing this is we have a bit more control. Well, we have a lot of all the controls of like if we want to have like certain friends or certain people be part of it in a number of different ways, we get to choose that, and that's a fun way, especially since I do a lot of performing here in town at IO and in Second City and stuff. I get to pick those people I already know are really talented and nice. So that
fit the vision of what you have character wise too.
Yeah, so when I'm creating certain things, I can write it with those people in mind.
Now, if you have network affiliation, the trade-off there is that they're going to publicize the show. When you're doing this on your own, though, how do you get the word out that your product even exists?
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of Facebook friends.
Is that what it is? Is it Facebook? Yeah.
But we get,
and
yeah,
Twitter.
All that Twitter, yeah. Facebook,
Instagram.
Twitter, all that stuff. Yeah.
And when you create good content, it has the opportunity to go viral in a way. I'm not saying that we have no responsibility to market our work. We absolutely do. Mm-hmm. But in the past, when we've both done, Namdi and I have both done digital sketches, so maybe not a full series, but I found that the one that's gotten the most hits for me, I actually just threw it up and I didn't do anything after that. It just kind of traveled on its own.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what happens when you have something that's people are interested in.
Yeah,
they share it.
Mm-hmm. I think back a couple of years ago, there's these guys, Lonely Island. Most people know Andy Samberg, but his friends also in Lonely Island. So they were just doing kind of digital shorts on the internet, and all of a sudden Saturday Night Live got a hold of them, two of them went on to be writers and one a performer on the show. That's a nice success story right there.
Yeah. It is, and I think even my mom wants to do an Indian vegetarian cooking. Well, she wants to do a vegetarian cooking show. And this is not even an original idea yet, because she has told me that there are all these people doing cooking shows in their own home, and they have huge audiences.
Oh, there's a ton. There's
huge audiences. Yeah. And they're doing it just in their kitchen, but there are people that are interested, and they're not waiting for Hollywood or anyone to greenlight them. They're just doing it because they have something to share.
Yeah, there's all kinds. I see even like couples that work out together, do fitness stuff. They have huge. They're just like, hey,
that's a different channel.
That's pay per view.
Yeah, people are looking for something, and if it relates to them, they're gonna follow it. I mean, I have teenage boys, and one of them follows this. Was it iDubbbz or something on YouTube? And it's just a goofy guy who walks through sewers and puts, you know, rotisserie chicken there, and go, oh look, there's a. It's so stupid, but they like it, and it's like millions of hits. Yeah. It's unreal to me.
Yeah. And to clarify, though, tonight, you know, this is, I mean, we're also going to be showing tonight, it's a, I think, a 27-minute pilot called Written Off that is fully high production.
It could air today.
Ready to go, could air tonight. It's hilarious. It's got Antoine McKay, who was on Empire and Main Stage, Second City guy, and Ira Amex, and Margie Shabazz is one of the producers on it. So that's a high production value one. And then we also have a couple others that are, you know, we're probably made on no budget, and you're going to see kind of a 5-minute preview, you know, pilot for it. So you're going to see the full range tonight. And all of the cool thing is what we're saying is all 9 of these have the potential to go to series. So you're really going to see one that was a 5-minute pilot that was the equivalent of being, you know, shot in the living room on an iPhone kind of thing. And then you're going to see one that they, you know, probably shot for a month and spent 3 months in post and made this beautiful pilot that's ready to show tomorrow.
And so as Pooja just said, it's, you know, you still put your work into it. It's not just because it's up on YouTube.
Oh,
you just slap
so
anything.
Much. I don't even want to say how much production value has gone into it. But the other thing I want to add just about people coming tonight, if you are in the creative community, you have to come tonight, because Mike McNamara and the Midwest Film Festival, what they're doing, he has become a force. Seriously, a force for film and creativity and storytelling in Chicago. I mean, he's not saying it, but I will say it.
He has a presence
at Sundance. He's at Sundance every year doing an event for all Chicago filmmakers and artists. So this is a really not just to showcase and see our pilots, but to connect with other writer creators, people that are making things, telling stories in Chicago, because this is the most exciting time to be in Chicago, and we have an amazing city to shoot in. I mean, every time I walk down Michigan Avenue, I see someone with a camera, and why wouldn't you shoot it? It's so beautiful.
Very exciting. Everyone's so I've told you this, Mike, before. Yeah. Whenever I go, everybody is so supportive of everybody else. You'd think it'd be a lot more cutthroat, and people are going, no, my work's better than your work. It's not like that
at
all.
That would just be you.
I would be that.
Yeah, Bill's off in the corner just with some popcorn, huddling the popcorn.
Yeah, that's how I am. But everybody else seems to get along. I don't understand.
Well, very exciting. It's all happening tonight. Give the deets again and where to find the info.
Again, if you want tickets, just head to MidwestFilm.com. We have maybe about 20 tickets left until we're sold out. Run to MidwestFilm.com. And then once we're sold out, we're packed. It's going to be 300 people, lots of creatives, lots of pilots, creators, filmmakers, artists, writers, directors, and just people that love watching stuff on the big screen.
What's wrong with that?
Doors at 6 p.m. at Landmark Century Center Cinema, 2828 North Clark, and find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and we'll see you tonight. It's going to be tons of fun, and it's really going to be just a vibrant, exciting evening tonight.
Nabdi, nice meeting you. Pooja, great meeting you.
Thank you.
Best of luck with this and everything else you guys do. I'm really happy for
you. When they go to series, then you can have them back on for the premiere.
Right.
If you need a radio duo in one of these series.
We're going to hold you to that.
That was nice. You got it. Mike, great to see you. Thanks so much.
You too.
A quick break, then we'll find out what Steve has next on the Wintrust Business Launch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Part 2 of our Tuesday show. I'm Bill Leff. That's Wendy Snyder. If you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you. Dial these numbers in this particular order, 312-981-7200. That's the phone line and the text line. Do it responsibly.
Text responsibly?
Text responsibly.
How's that Pokemon Go going? I'm finished with it.
Can I tell you something? When you first told me about that, I said to myself, here's a fad that's going to burn out Supernova very quickly. And it did, right?
I think the kids are still playing it.
I think when they went back to school, I think it kind of ended,
that
right?
That was the end.
Yeah.
It was a good summer game. I had fun when I was doing it, although, you know, can I be honest with you? The last time I played was when I walked outside in the front of the Tribune Tower, because there were a lot of Pokemon stops there, because there are various items stuck in the Tribune building.
Right.
And I walked outside, and I caught Pidgey, which is a bird, and a Pidgey pooped on my breast.
How's that for irony?
It is weird. I had just caught Pidgey, and then a bird dumped right on my left one.
Yep. That's what you get for playing Pokemon Go.
That's augmented reality right there.
Forget
about
it.
Virtual reality. That's reality.
So wait, was that in the game?
No, that was real.
I know, because I had to wash it off, and then I stopped playing after that.
These games are getting super realistic these days, aren't they? Wow.
If you, Ryan, I don't know if you experienced this, you could also walk outside our building here, and John Cass would play a game called Smokymon Go, where different journalists would be smoking cigarettes, and you had to try to find them throughout the city.
Oh, yeah, I've played that game. Him and Old School out there, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was a good time.
Poor John Cass, if he only knew. Check out his podcast at WGNplus.com.
Smoking.
Why doesn't he call it that?
That's what it should be called.
Smoking recipes is what it should be.
I know. That's what it should be called. I got a crazy story for you in that particular order. Listen to this. This is true. This was on the Yahoo. A New Jersey man was arrested last week after cops say he sunned himself on the beach in nothing but a homemade bikini shorts that was fashioned out of plastic wrap. He made himself a bathing suit made out of plastic wrap. Beach Haven police say Stephen Wojciechowski, age 59. I was picturing in my head a younger man for some weird reason.
Yeah, well.
My brain doesn't want to accept it anyway, but now we find out Stephen's 59.
The people that should be naked aren't.
Never. That's how it goes. He spent 2 days on Long Beach Island wearing a revealing...
Not that Long Beach.
Don't cheapen it. This is such an important story. This is a cautionary tale to people who want to make bathing suits out of saran wrap. Wearing revealing swimwear that clearly exposed his genitals to beachgoers. This
I get it.
To a, clearly.
Mm-hmm. That's some good writing.
Wojciechowski was arrested following an investigation. Did you need an investigation? There's a man wearing saran wrap trunks. Investigation closed. Based on information provided by several eyewitnesses, it doesn't say here, but I'm guessing queasy eyewitnesses, the facts developed as a result of the investigation led to an arrest and subsequent charge of lewdness, according to a police statement. He was released pending a future court appearance. Police did not provide a possible explanation for Wojciechowski's strange choice of outfit. But several commenters on the Beach Haven Police Department Facebook page had a theory or two. The consensus, the suspect just wanted to avoid tan lines. Well, you can't fault a guy for that.
At that point, just go naked.
Yeah, I guess. I've seen pictures of the guy, Wendy. You don't want that.
Just wear a jock strap. Wouldn't that make sense?
Have you ever been in a place? I've been in a couple places where, and I think this is a thing in France and parts of Canada, where they just wear their underwear at the beach. That's what they wear. They just take their clothes off and they have their underwear on. And they go, this is fine.
It's called a Speedo.
No, it's not even a Speedo. It's
like tidy whities
underwear. Yeah, or if it's a woman, just, you know, whatever she has on under her clothes. But I somehow that's perfectly acceptable in France and French Canada.
I see London. I see France.
I've seen everybody on the beach's underpants. But if you go, like, there's beaches in Maine, because if you go to northern Maine, you're practically in Canada. Canada's just over there, right?
Do they put a lobster on it?
If that's what's needed.
Because no tan lines, you know,
right.
To worry about there.
Right.
Need a tan.
No. Watch your
Carrie
pinchers.
Johnson.
No. So the first time I ever saw it was in Florida, where there was a large group of Canadians all vacationing there. All in their underwear on the beach. And I know they sell bathing suits in Canada.
How do you know it's underwear?
It's their underwear. I watched them closely.
Well, maybe they wore their bathing suit under their pants.
This was underwear. This
that'd be really weird.
That would be weird. This was underwear.
Why would that be weird if you're going to the beach? You don't do that ever? You put your suit on and then you get dressed over it on your way there.
I have a handful of times worn my trunks underneath my pants, but you can tell the difference between swimsuits and underwear.
Well, some people don't just wear trunks. That was such an old man thing to say.
There's the whole access panel in the front.
There's that.
Right? They don't have those in trunks.
Right? They don't have that?
Yes, they do.
No. No.
Not the sliding glass door.
Right.
They have a fly, a Velcro fly.
Yeah, but there's a difference between the one on trunks and the ones on underwear.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Look at the camera. Shut up, Steve.
you don't want what's about to happen in the newsroom, or you don't want to be at the beach and have spillage.
Objects in the monitor may appear larger than they really are.
Right.
Nuh-uh.
There's no doubt about it. It's underwear. I'm 100% positive.
I have never heard of this. In France, they're too hip to be doing that.
In France, they do it. And in, because Canada's, mostly French settled, so it's there too. But not other parts of Europe. Like, I've been other parts of Europe, and everyone's got their regular swimwear on. Why in France?
Their trunks?
Yeah. And you've been to France, right? Little built-in ashtrays in their bathing suits so that they can smoke and swim at the same time.
Is that true that people in France all smoke?
Everybody. It's their butt.
Right. That's the name of it. That's what it's called. Everyone in France smokes. Everybody.
Even
men,
babies?
Men, women, babies, dogs. Everybody in France smokes.
I've never been to France, so I wouldn't know.
I have been, Epcot Center, but it's the same. And they all smoke.
I thought nobody smokes anymore.
Not in France. It's like a sport. That's the highest honor you can pay somebody, is the Golden Cigarette Award.
Did you have a liquid lunch?
No.
Oh.
No, why?
Because.
I'm just reminiscing about France, which I've heard is great.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, afternoon. I was just calling about your topic. We were on a cruise line years back, and they had a European deck, and we walked up there and kind of ruined my dinner for about 2 days.
Because why? Everyone's in their underwear, right?
There was nothing. It was just everybody was out sunning, and
And they were out sunning.
Oh yeah. No.
Yeah, it was a little windy, but too much or too little, however you want to.
And they don't explain it more than just using the term European deck. They don't say, by the way, if you visit deck 3, there's going to be a lot of naked people. They just say it's European deck.
Well, the sign said nobody under 21 could go up on this deck. And we kind of figured that it was either alcohol or the other. And, it just kind of ruined my...
And you figure you'd go check, right?
Yeah, you got to make sure.
Oh, yeah. There's obviously... employee, at the bottom of the stairs before you walk up, but
carting everyone.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I'll need those.
And taking your clothes out of your hand for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a lovely story, Dave. I'm sorry. You were, you had a bad moment. Were you able to get it out of your mind?
I had it out of my mind until you brought it up.
Till now.
Sorry.
You can thank Bill for that. Now, all right, let me ask you both a question. Would you rather see a guy who shouldn't be naked wearing his underpants at the beach or naked?
Underpants.
Well, I don't know. I've actually seen guys wearing Speedos and it look like nothing, too. So,
Dave, you really lived.
We kind of America, we probably should just call it like crotch rope or something.
Sure, let's do that. All right. Thanks, Dave.
All right,
crotch rope and butt. That's what we've learned this afternoon.
That was a cop show on Fox for a while, remember? We used to watch. All right, we'll take a break, a court-ordered break, and then if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and
Captain
Wendy.
Kincaid is furious again.
Yeah, I know he is. More of this in a moment, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy doesn't believe me, but in France, they don't sell swimsuits. You just go to the beach in your underpants. That's it. And in Canada, parts of Canada. Underpants only, it says on the sign. No bathing suits allowed.
I don't believe you. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm listening to your conversation.
Why?
25 years ago, my girlfriends and I, we took a trip to Hawaii. Our kids were graduating from high school, and we said, hey, our time we can go. And when we went, we were on a beach in Waikiki, and we saw some ladies and gentlemen. They were European, and they were out sunning. And the ladies, they go, they walk right up on the beach, take off their clothes in their underwear, and they're all past their 50s. I mean, they're like us. Everything's hanging and stuff, nothing's firm. The men do the same thing.
Hmm.
And we were cracking up, and we were making remarks, hey, they need some Clorox and things like that, you know, because things were dingy. And they went in the water. And we were just like, I can't believe this.
Yep.
Now, there was young people walking on the beach in their thong bathing suits. Everything was nice, firm, beautifully tanned. Compared to these people, it was hilarious. We went to a resort on the big island, and around the pool, sunning, the same doggone thing. Now, you would think maybe they might have colored underwear or something.
No.
With that. No, it was just white. And the ladies, one lady had on cotton underwear. All the rest were that silky, and God forbid when it got wet. And the gentleman.
Oh.
The beer belly hung over, and you couldn't tell sometimes if they had anything on or not until they turned around. We were cracking up laughing. We thought it was hilarious.
Sure.
You know, and we go, I can't believe they're doing this.
Now do you believe me?
All right.
Now, yeah?
I might believe Bill now because
Linda
of you,
doesn't
Linda.
Lie.
Oh, yeah. And when we come back and told our husbands about it, my one girlfriend did take pictures. And she was passing them around and showing them, and the guys couldn't believe it. Boy, did they have remarks about the men.
I'm sure they did.
After that, many of our friends that we knew seemed to be a little more conscientious about how they dressed. That, because they said, we don't want to give the impression the Europeans gave us.
Right. Absolutely true. How about
enjoy
that?
Enjoy your program very much.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for sharing that story. We enjoyed that.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You know, Wendy, that there's a place in France where the naked ladies dance, and there's a hole in the wall where the men can see it all, but the men don't care because they're in their underwear. You know that.
I didn't know it till now.
That's the national anthem of France. I just sang the national anthem of France.
Really painting France in a bad light right now.
I don't
and
mean
with this
to.
Whole Kim Kardashian
oh,
thing going
yeah.
on.
Bad timing. Bad timing. I apologize. A couple of years ago, you know, for years when we would do our baseball fantasy draft, we did it in Las Vegas. So half the guys from Chicago, half the guys from Los Angeles, we'd all meet in Las Vegas.
You couldn't do it in somebody's basement?
No, we figured Las Vegas is kind of in the middle.
They did. They just have to go to Vegas and find someone who was
right.
Home.
They, right. They have basements in Las Vegas.
I guess.
All right. So we're staying at Caesar's Palace, all of us.
Old
and
school.
One day we go down to the pool. It's our first night. It's our first day there. We all got there at night. So in the day, four or five of us decide we're going to go to the pool. So we go downstairs, and they say when we get downstairs to where the pool is, would you gentlemen like the regular pool or the topless pool? So we voted.
And unanimously.
By unanimous decision.
Yes.
We say, well, we were going to take our shirts off anyway, so why don't you point us in the direction of the topless pool, please? And be quick about it, we said. And then it was like $25 a person.
What?
So we said, wait, what? You didn't mention that in your pitch for the topless pool. So then they explained to us that for the ladies, come on in for free. But for the men, it would be a $25 charge. So we opted out.
This is the place that gives you free buffets and you have
you
to pay for
the pool?
You get
free anything in Las Vegas. I mean, really, if you gamble there, just go, you know what I would like is a motorcycle. And they'll go, hold on, and they'll pull up a Kawasaki for you. But, yeah, the pool would have cost $25.
Per person.
Per person.
And you didn't pay it.
I can't believe you didn't pay it. You are cheap.
It's not... No, because we even felt guilty. Four out of the five of us were married, so we're like, just to sit at the pool is weird.
But if it was free, you wouldn't have felt guilty.
For free, then you go, they said, right. We got two pools, one on the left, one on the right. We'll take that one,
this
please.
One was less crowded, honey.
Right. Right. Better view. So we said, you know what? We'll say no thank you to the $25. And one of my friends goes, I halfway expected him to go, oh, what the heck, you're here. Just go on in. But they didn't do that.
So again, that would have been acceptable.
Yes, and they hung around right, waiting for the guy to right. say that.
Well, then when you have to confess your sins,
to
you could
whom?
Say, well, either to your God or in my case to my wife. Then you could say, well, it didn't cost extra. Nicer pool.
Right. It's a bigger offense if you say, honey, we paid $25 right. to go to the. That's true.
Then it's a crime.
It is a crime. They shouldn't be charging that.
Well, one of my friends said, hey, that's sexual harassment, which I don't think it is, because he said, you know, women get in for free.
No, it's prostitution.
I don't even think it is that, is
well,
it?
The women
what
are getting it? The women are getting a benefit that the men aren't for taking their clothes
really?
Off.
Really? You ever hear a ladies' night?
Taking their clothes off.
Well, yeah,
not
I guess.
All of it.
But,
it was just
but
the
they
tops.
Weren't being compensated for that.
Maybe they would have paid you guys $25 to keep your shirts on.
No, maybe.
It's a wash.
They would have. All right, we'll take. That's an ugly thought, but true. We'll take a break, and then there's more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. And if you want to be a part of the show, 312-981-7200 can get that done very simply. I want to bring a commercial to your attention. This is a commercial that I see on television all the time. It's a commercial I see in print all the time. It's a commercial that used to run right here on this very radio station, WGN, quite often. And not 10 minutes ago, I turned my computer on, and it is the commercial that runs on the main page of Yahoo. So it's a pretty prevalent commercial.
All right.
I'm fine with the commercial. I understand the entire commercial, I think, until it gets to the very last line of the commercial, and that's the part that stymies me. If I can name one of my favorite little rascals. The commercial starts out, now I'm paraphrasing to an extent, but I will read you the last line word for word because, like I said, it's on Yahoo on their main page right now, and the last line is the same. It's one and the same.
All right, and you're going to read the line, and what do you know what it's for?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yes. All right. The commercial starts out by saying this. Robert Kiyosaki is the author of Rich Dad. Robert Kiyosaki has brought countless millions to people all over the world. Robert Kiyosaki is coming to your town to help spread his wealth. Robert Kiyosaki knows a good deal from a bad deal. And it goes on and on and on and tells you about this man who is an author and an investor, and his name is Robert Kiyosaki. And then at the end of the commercial, and I have it here in print, it's not just my imagination, after telling you all the things that Robert Kiyosaki has done and that he is coming to your area, and he wants to make everybody wealthy, they say this, Robert Kiyosaki will not be attending this event.
Well, that's a bummer.
Why would they tell us about him and that he wants to make everybody rich? Now, here again, just to prove my... Oh, no, my monitor.
He just unplugged
my
his monitor.
My monitor just went out.
All right, well, like L. Ron Hubbard doesn't go to things anymore
either.
Well,
he's been gone for several years.
He doesn't.
Robert
Kiyosaki. Do we know that Robert Kiyosaki is still
alive?
He's
still among us.
I keep inviting L. Ron over, and he never shows up.
He is
well, that's
still
what
among
I mean.
Us.
It's
oh,
his
so
program, his...
I know,
but he doesn't have to be there to explain how it works.
I guess, but the whole commercial leads you to believe that if I attend this, and Steve, you remember for years we ran those commercials. He would come to town
right.
a couple of times a year, and we would run the commercials here on the station, and they would just go on and on about how good he's been with his own money, and he wants to share those investment strategies with you. And I'm going, oh, boy, I only have a couple $100, but Robert Kiyosaki could take that and turn it into millions of dollars. I would like to see him. And then at the very end, they say, Robert Kiyosaki will not be attending this event. And then I go, well, why did you just tell me how great it would be to see Robert Kiyosaki? And why doesn't he show up? What's he doing that's more important than helping spread the word of money?
Writing another book.
I guess so. He's so elusive. He's the Greta Garbo of money. Will Greta Garbo be attending the event? If she's there, I would go.
That is kind of weird because they're saying he's coming to your town. It's just
he's in my town. Can't he come to the event?
He's not in your town.
They say he's coming. They wouldn't lie.
His program is coming.
I guess, but it's so vague the way they say it. They just say it as if to say, you better start vacuuming because he might come to your house. He's going to be in your town. He might need a place to stay.
I think he's got enough money to...
to buy me.
Yes.
He could buy my house and me. But who said, hey, here's what we'll do. We'll get people so jazzed up on the fact that Robert Kiyosaki is going to be right there in the neighborhood, but then we'll break the bad news that he will not be attending the event.
Well, now, dated October 2nd of this year, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
2 days ago?
Yeah.
He's claiming bankruptcy.
Oh, no.
See what you've done to him? Boy, that happened quickly.
Wow. We just started talking about this 4 minutes ago, and he's already declaring bankruptcy. Is that true?
That's what it says. A story came across the news this week about Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
He's citing the high cost of travel.
And how his company went bankrupt last month.
Oh, no.
Basically, the company didn't pay the proper royalties on its seminars, and when they lost in court, they didn't have enough money to pay it all. It wasn't a personal bankruptcy.
No, I know.
Rather a corporate bankruptcy.
Was he not paying taxes for 15 years?
Well, he's not going to have to now for the next 15 years.
Right. Right. All right. I was sure that if the Kiyosaki Empire ever went belly up, it'd be because he was telling people he was going to be somewhere and not showing up. Although the fine print always points out that he will not be attending this event. That would be like if we said, you and I, we're doing a Hometown Voices, come on out to Payless Hills, Bill and Wendy, Hometown Voices tour. Can't wait to see you. And Wendy will not be attending this event.
That's
crazy. Robert Kiyosaki will.
Well, he doesn't have enough money now to...
Now I feel guilty. I feel awful now.
He wrote and sold his book, and then there's a class that you can take.
That he will not attend.
But again, that's he's not going bankrupt. He's bankrupting his business,
his company
right?
is.
So he's probably... This is one of the ways he makes money. He's probably very protected.
I bet he is. But then even when he goes to court, his lawyers would just go, we'll be there, but Robert Kiyosaki will not be attending this court proceeding.
Interesting. This is the collegeinvestor.com. Prior to his 1997 publication of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki...
Which now he's been both. So to his credit, he's living up to the title of his book.
Again, his company lost money. We don't know that
he
is.
Oh, maybe he's fine. All right.
So 97 it came out. And prior to that, Robert Kiyosaki... Never
had... You have to say it very fast. Say it very fast.
Robert
Kiyosaki will not be attending this event.
And he never had any documentation of the wealth he supposedly amassed. That's according to Forbes.
Oh, no.
There really wasn't a rich dad, even though his book specifically claims there was one. But,
Wendy, there's no more heroes. All the heroes are going away.
Well, if Robert Kiyosaki is going away, what will we do?
I believed him. I wanted to attend his event, even though he wasn't going to. What was more important, though?
I don't think he
ever went.
That's
so disturbing. He never attended his events? That's bad. That's a bad track record.
I hope he's still not advertising on this station.
That would be like if you went to see Springsteen and then they go, well, Springsteen doesn't come to his shows. He doesn't?
But it's the Springsteen show.
Right. Yeah. Stevie Van Zandt's up there. Go say hi to him.
But no Springsteen.
No, Springsteen will not be attending this event.
For $25 extra, you can see Springsteen without a shirt on.
I wish I hadn't blanked out my monitor because like the commercials where they throw it in really subtly at the end, like after they build him up for 45 seconds, he's the greatest guy. He's got all kinds of money. He'll make you all kinds of money. Just bring a penny. You'll have $1,000. You go, oh, I want to see this guy. So then they slip it in at the end, not attending this event. In the print ad for this, or the online ad, there's a giant picture of him, and there's all kinds of wealthy guy stuff, and then it says in letters about like a half an inch tall, Robert Kiyosaki will not be attending this event. Isn't that kind of false advertising? Kind of. I mean, I know they're admitting he's not going to be there, but
it's one of those images that you have to stare at for a while to read the words.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Like every time I saw the ad, I go, they should mention that he's not going to be there.
Is that it? Robert Kiyosaki will not attend this event.
Yeah, but you don't have the ad I had. I had a big picture of him smiling, like with his arms outreached as if to say, welcome, my friends.
It's a workshop based on his book. So it's not his workshop.
But shouldn't they have said that? Shouldn't they have made that more clear? When I went to Trump University, you know the first thing they taught us, Wendy? Because you have to be honest when you're advertising.
Robert Kiyosaki is coming to your town, and so is Yorgi.
Right.
Hey, Yorgi.
From SCTV.
He's coming to your town, but he's not really going to be there.
No, he won't be there. No. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Stick around. Bill and Wendy will not be attending this event on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we're going to talk about something that is happening in November, but we'd like everybody to find out about right now. Human Rights Campaign. The Human Rights Campaign is America's largest civil rights organization working to achieve lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender equality. And the co-chair of the Chicago chapter, is that it? Victor Lim in the studio with us. Hi, Victor.
Hey, Victor.
Hi, Bill and Wendy. Thanks for having
me.
Absolutely. Now, there's a gala, or do you say gala? Which do you say?
I say gala, but people say both, so I think it's just a personal interpretation.
I'll say gala. Gala? That sounds weird.
It started out as gala, but it identifies as gala. How about that? Does that work? Let's go with that. All right.
Victor, it's happening Saturday, November 12th at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Upper Wacker Drive. First and foremost, why don't you tell us about the Human Rights Campaign? You got to talk right into that microphone, too.
Yeah. So, as you said, the Human Rights Campaign is the nation's largest LGBTQ civil rights organization. So, really, what we're trying to do is A, bring awareness to all the LGBTQ issues that are happening.
There are tons of them.
There are tons of them. And, you know, it goes above and beyond what we're doing, you know, on the marriage front, which was big a few years ago. But things such as, you know, pushing forward what we're calling the Equality Act. Mm-hmm. And that's to amend the Civil Rights Amendment to that protects the LGBTQ people as a protected class, just like race, religion, you can't be fired for that. Even though you can get married in all 50 states, you can still actually get fired in 32 states for just being LGBTQ. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
That's
on that
an
front.
Acceptable way to release somebody, to fire somebody, is just that. That's all they need.
Exactly. So, you know, you get married Saturday, you post something on Facebook, Monday, you could be fired. And those are the issues that the Human Rights Campaign is trying to change and really push forward by bringing awareness to the community, but then also being a political arm, making sure that fair-minded elected officials are getting elected in these states and nationally in general. And then also, you know, just lobbying the different political organizations to kind of help rally and make sure that, you know, we live in this great free country.
I don't understand why people care what is going on in somebody else's life. I mean, all right, so say there's a heterosexual person working in the cubicle next to you and they handcuff their wife at night and whip her. You know, that might not be something I'm into, but what business is it of the employer what you do in your own house and whom you love? I don't understand it. And I'm, you know, hetero and I'm bothered by it. I can't imagine how people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning how they feel about it. Do you get a pit in your stomach? What happens? I don't understand it.
I don't either. And that's why we're doing what we're doing, because, you know, not only employment, but, you know, access to fair housing, making sure you have access to fair medical treatment, you know, all of that is part of, you know, this larger initiative to just, again, make sure that we're just all treated equally.
Victor, some of these laws are federal laws, but some of them are state-by-state laws, correct?
Correct.
All right. That makes it even more confusing.
Exactly.
Doesn't it? Are we making progress? We like to think we're making progress from time to time, but then things happen and you go, I think we're regressing more than moving forward. What do you think?
You know, overall, I think we are making progress. Again, marriage was a big one. Everyone could kind of really conceptualize that. So there was a lot of support and obviously, you know, that pushed through in the Supreme Court. And that was a huge victory for us. Now,
have people forgotten about that now, kind of?
Some have. Yeah. And I think, you know, the pros and cons of what you're seeing that's happening in the landscape now. There's a lot of things going on in North Carolina right now with, you know, what everyone's calling the quote unquote bathroom laws. As unfair as they are, it's kind of bringing back to attention. There's a lot more work that needs to be done. And I think, unfortunately, that digression will hopefully help progression and, you know, let us win the fight.
Here's my thought on all of this. You have people who are against something because they don't understand it or they're scared of it. But then you always think, you know, if your child is a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning, and they see the parent not being accepting of that, they'll never tell their parent. And I can't imagine a kid choosing that because it's tough. it's tough growing up in that world. It's tough growing up in the world for heterosexual people. I can't imagine someone would choose this to make their life harder. So the more we talk about it, hopefully the more we're aware of it. And this is your biggest human rights campaign fundraiser locally, correct? This thing going on in November?
Correct. So this is our largest fundraiser. Our goal is to have at least 650 attendees. Mm-hmm. And obviously, all the proceeds go back to fund all the efforts that we're doing across the nation to kind of fight the fight.
Okay, so this is the date again is Saturday, November 12th. We wanted people to mark the date, put it on your, what is it, the save the date thing?
Yeah, save the date. That's it.
Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Wacker Drive. Is there a website to go to find out more information about this gala or to find out more information about the human rights campaign in general?
Yep, so to find out more information about the gala, you can go to www.hrcchicago.org. And there you can figure out all the information. It's going to be a fun night with dinner, a silent auction. There'll be dancing afterwards and a plethora of different speakers. To find out more about HRC as well, you can go to that same website or you could go to the national website at www.hrc.org.
Okay, and for people who want to help spread the word, or maybe there's someone in your family who is LGBTQ, are there family events, family-friendly events they can find out that HRC has something to do with?
Yeah, we're doing events all throughout the year. Again, you know, this one is primarily a fundraiser, but, you know, we have community family picnics. We're at all the various pride festivals through the city, and we also try and put on different educational and community seminars. They range from things such as book readings with kids and bookstores about LGBTQ youth to kind of larger issues where we host things about corporate equality index and, you know, how to kind of make your company more inclusive.
It's so cool to see my kids, and I know your daughters as well. It's not a question in their mind anymore because as they're growing up, it's around them. Maybe when we were growing up, I didn't know very many gay people. Maybe I did and was unaware of it. But now it's like kids are so accepting. I know there's still some bullying going on, but we can all learn from the kids. Everyone's different, and maybe we should all accept one another. Co-chair of the Chicago Local, the Human Rights Campaign, Victor Lim, you have given us a pair of tickets to give away if somebody would like to partake in all the festivities that's going on Saturday, November 12th at the Hyatt Regency Chicago. It's the Human Rights Campaign Gala. I got to say gala.
Sure.
I can't say gala.
It's up to you.
How do you want to do this? What number caller?
How about caller 10 right now? Be caller 10 at 312-981-7200 and you will snag a pair of those tickets.
Good luck. Have fun. Dance well. And I hope people win something at the silent auction. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Victor. We'll take a quick break, announce the winner, and then Steve's News is next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Oh, this is creepy.
Isn't
That's
this creepy?
All I'm
say. This is some creepy music.
Bill, you brought this to our attention on this very show several weeks ago, where you said that there was there were some clown sightings.
Right.
Well, now they're happening all over the place.
They're
happening at school. Steve, you said your son saw one at school.
I woke up. Well, first of all, on like a Facebook page, they were talking about shutting down parts of the campus because of a scary clown.
At what school?
Well, this was Miami of Ohio, but I don't put too much. You know, I think people start to say stuff. But anyway, he faxed me a picture of this clown standing on a street last night in the dark.
It's eerie, isn't it?
It's freaky scary.
Well, we'll put that up on Facebook. And then my son tells me that Proviso West High School in Hillside was on a soft lockdown because of a clown, although I can't find any news reports.
Clown alert.
So well, that's what I mean. I think we're getting a lot of rumors now too, Wendy.
Well, that's why we have ABC News correspondent Alex Stone on the line to help us decipher all this. Be careful. Don't turn around, Alex.
I wish I had an answer for you guys. Nobody knows what's up with these clowns right now. But, in fact, the White House today was even asked about these clowns. And the White House said even they don't know that it's a local police issue. And this happens today as there have been reports all over the country of people seeing clowns or thinking they're seeing clowns or clowns on social media making threats that there is a police department in Utah, right outside of Salt Lake City, that has actually taken to social media, Orem, Utah police, to say, no, you cannot shoot a clown if you see a clown, unless that clown is on your property doing something illegal. They say that they've been getting bombarded by 911 calls and Facebook questions asking at what point can you shoot somebody dressed up like a clown if you see them. And Orem, Utah police saying, well, you really can't. And they give a link to the what you can do, force against another person when it is legal to shoot somebody, saying that unless that clown is harming you in a potentially life-threatening situation, you cannot pull out a gun and shoot that clown. Not far away, just north of Salt Lake City yesterday, they locked down schools because of a potential threat that had been made online by somebody dressed up in a clown costume. So it's spreading, it's freaky, but nobody knows what it is.
But Alex, what about this phrase that the government keeps telling us, if you see something, spray something? What about that?
No, it's say
something. Oh, is it say something? I'm sorry.
You see something, honk their nose?
Yes.
Hard to say what this is, but the White House took it very seriously when Josh Earnest was asked today, and police departments seem to be taking it seriously as well. The Utah Police Department saying, hey, if you see a clown, call 911. We'll go and we'll check it out. You know, in some of these cases, people report that they saw clowns with guns, or mainly online, but also in person in some of these reports that have come in. Psychologists say that this is kind of a mix of things, that in some cases, sure, that somebody probably thinks it's funny. It's a pretty easy prank to pull off, dress up like a clown, and if you don't have a weapon or something, it's not illegal, so you're not going to get arrested for it, but you can freak people out. It's going to make the news. People are going to be talking about it. Copycats do it as well as they hear about this going on.
Copy and clowns,
in other cases,
Alex.
Maybe young children who, you know, this is kind of a nightmarish thing to see a clown, that they may think they see something, may not have actually seen it. So in some cases, there may actually be a human behind it. In other cases, it may be a child's imagination.
I got to tell you something. If I'm thinking about dressing up as a clown and going to freak people out, I would think twice, because in this climate right now, you really may get shot.
Yeah.
Maybe not by police, but by people who are freaking out, thinking killer clowns from outer space are coming to get us.
Well, true. And that's why in Orem, Utah, they are telling people you cannot just pull out a gun and shoot a clown if you see him standing on a street corner. You know, you hope that it's not somebody who is advertising a business or something standing on a street corner with a sign who ends up getting shot. And that's why police are saying, no, unless they are breaking into your house or unless they are attacking you, that just because you see a clown standing on a sidewalk, that is not a reason why you can pull out a gun and shoot them.
Alex, what about the story a couple of weeks ago, somewhere in the South, and I don't remember exactly where in the South, parents were saying that clowns were trying to lure their children into the forest. Do we know if that was true or not true?
You know, again, talking about the doctors who have been watching this, they say that is an old kind of tale from that they have heard over decades and decades, of children reporting typically related to a white van and typically around a forest, to kind of that nightmarish scenario.
Yeah.
No, nothing was ever substantiated. And again, these psychiatrists and psychologists seem to think that may have been the imagination of a child coming up with that story. Then again, it could have been somebody who thought that they were funny doing it, because that does fit the kind of normal scenario. Or it could have been a predator of some kind. But no indication that there was ever really anything to that.
I got to ask a question, too. Why do ne'er-do-wells always use the white vans? At this point, wouldn't you switch colors?
Sure.
That's my question.
It does kind of seem that way. And right, there's a white van in our neighborhood that's always kind of out of place. And, you know, that's the first thing I think of. But I think if a predator is going to do something, wouldn't they choose some other vehicle nowadays? Why would you pull up in a white van any longer?
Yeah, right. You wouldn't. And this on our own WGN News, schools in Chicago Heights have extra security today because of a Facebook threat yesterday from a clown gang.
Oh, no.
It's escalating.
Those are the worst kinds of gangs, aren't they?
Yes.
I know we laugh.
The Crips pretty soon are going to go, you know what we could do? We could put on a big red nose and put on makeup and some fuzzy hair. No, there's nothing funny to it if it turns out to be a real threat, if there really is a threat. It seems like at this point that it's people who have heard about this and they are taking to social media. They're taking to putting on costumes and standing around to scare people as we come up on Halloween. But so far, there has been no indication of any real threat. But police departments, schools, they're taking it seriously just in case.
Let me read to you very quickly, Alex. This is from a website in England, The Sun. That's based on their newspaper, The Sun, where they're having a similar problem in England, that sightings of men in clown costumes trying to tempt kids into the woods or standing in sinister manner are befalling the streets of England. So it's not just a United States phenomenon. It's going on overseas
as
well.
Is there a new clown movie coming out that we're unaware of?
They're remaking It, the Stephen King book It. They're remaking that. So I wonder...
Well, there you go. Maybe we're going to find out in the end that this is all publicity or just got people thinking about doing it. It does come and go, though. This is not the first time that the country, and apparently other countries, have dealt with clown reports of sinister clowns, and it starts to grow on itself. The U.S. has had this before, and now we're kind of in the middle of one. And there's some thought it may be peaking right now, but it seems like, you know, with police departments now issuing statements and the White House being asked about it, maybe we're not peaking yet.
Oh, my God. The White House was being asked about the clowns. And, you know, we are in the same month as Halloween now, so who knows if there's a connection there as well.
Sure.
Pick a better costume, people.
It's scary, Alex, isn't it? It's frightening.
It is. I mean, look, if I saw a clown at, you know, 10 o'clock at night standing on a playground somewhere, I too would be running and calling 911.
Right.
But so far, in my town of Santa Clarita, California, I have not seen any clowns.
Are you in favor of clown curfews?
I am against clown gangs.
Are you against it? All right, that seems fair.
All right, well, watch your back, Alex. Be careful out there.
Sounds good, guys.
Thanks, Alex. It's Alex Stone of ABC News.
Thanks.
Talking about one of the strangest things going on in ever.
I know. The White House was brought, it was brought up to the White House.
Yeah.
Hey, what about these clowns that have been appearing everywhere?
And they legitimately accepted the question and answered the question. They didn't say, don't waste our time with this, please. They were all right with it. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we've got more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Let's hope that show has a long run. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks.
All right. We had Victor Lim up here. The Human Rights Campaign is having this big fundraiser. We gave away a pair of tickets, and Stacy from Cherry, Illinois won.
Right.
And I am ashamed that I have never heard of Cherry, Illinois. And please be honest, you didn't either.
I don't think I knew that Cherry was a town in Illinois. I knew that there were towns called Cherry somewhere in the United States,
not
but
here.
I didn't know as close as it is. I'm embarrassed.
Well, you should be embarrassed because about 480 men and boys went to work in the Cherry, Illinois coal mine on November 13th, 1909. Most were from Europe. They were immigrants. They were new to America.
Mm-hmm.
Many lived in Streeter. I know where Streeter is.
Sure.
Or in towns that dotted the Illinois River. They knew the risks. 5 to 7 miners died on average every month in northern Illinois mines during that time.
Which mine was this? A coal mine, was it? Does it say? I thought you said, but I don't remember.
Well, the Cherry Mine, I would imagine that's a coal mine.
Yeah.
What else do they mine?
Cherries.
Oh, it's not a cherry mine.
It's in Cherry. It's located in the town of Cherry.
Good. Some of the biggest gains in mining safety came only after 259 of the Cherry miners, some as young as 10 years of age, died horribly in what ranks as America's second worst mining disaster.
Oh, no.
Many of them burned in a fire caused when hay was left beneath a dripping kerosene torch. Flames consuming their bodies and the bodies of mules lit the terror-filled scene as their friends and relatives smothered when a shroud of dense smoke called black damp filled the tunnels.
And this was in 1909, did
yes.
you say? Wow.
The image of that is just so horrific. I couldn't shake it. Steve Stout is a school teacher and owner of Starved Rock Camera in Utica, Illinois. I pass all these towns on the way to Peoria to see my brother.
Yeah.
He wrote, this Steve Stout wrote the book called Black Damp, The Story of the Cherry Mining Disaster. Mass hysteria.
And they had 10-year-olds working in that mine.
Boy, that's terrible. You come to this country to find a better future, and they got you at 10 years old working in a mine to make some money.
That's not good.
259 people killed in the Cherry Mine disaster.
Now, I don't know that you'll know the answer to this, because up until a few minutes ago, we didn't know that the town existed. But is it possible that mining still goes on in that city, in Cherry?
We should have asked Stacy when she won tickets. No, but it did change some things. As I mentioned, many of the victims were children, some as young as 10. The disaster spurred the development of the first workers' compensation program in the United States.
Good.
Better safety procedures were mandated, and the U.S. Bureau of Mines was established to improve government oversight. The United Mine Workers used the incident to gain members. So if somebody is from the Cherry area, 312-981-7200, I'm curious if that mine is still, I don't think it's active.
I don't know that it is. I'd be shocked. And you said this is right around La Salle, Peru. It's right in that region?
Yes, in Ottawa and Streeter, in that whole area. Cherry Mine, Illinois. It does sound like it's a cherry mine, but it isn't. It's the name of the place.
That would seem to be a more pleasant work environment. Maybe yes. Not even as safe. I don't know. I'm trying to imagine the mindset. You're 10 years old and you're working
mindset.
In a coal mine. Yeah. Working in a coal mine at 10.
It was a cave in Cherry, Illinois, in a coal mine in 1909.
What could they have possibly earned back then? What could a 10-year-old make working in a coal mine in 1909? Like a penny a month or something?
I don't know, but they sent
they
the
well
money
compensated.
Back to their families.
Yeah. In Europe?
That's where it said it came from.
Yeah. Wow.
And then there is... The Cherry Mine disaster was one of the catalysts for a reform in child labor laws, obviously, in addition to mining safety and operation regulations.
This would make a good movie. How come nobody made a movie out of this?
Well, there's a book called Trapped by Karen Tintori. It's a riveting account of the disaster. One of the Chicago Tribune's favorite books of 2002.
Oh.
1909 is when this happened.
Are there pictures?
No.
No?
I mean, I'm sure there are. Somewhere on the internet. Directions to Cherry, Illinois, I-80.
Yeah.
There's a memorial there and a mass grave. I-80 exit 70, then north on Highway 89, about 4.5 miles. The memorial is in Miner's Cemetery on the south side of town in Cherry, Illinois.
So not that far from here.
No, and
really
how come I've never heard of it?
I don't know, me neither.
I feel very foolish. Susan, you know about the Cherry Mines?
We live about 15 miles from there, and I was just going to tell you, there's no mines operating at all. There is a memorial, and there's a lot of the graves in the cemetery, and they do kind of have a remembrance every year, but that's about it.
Susan, once this mining disaster took place in 1909, did they rebuild the mine for any length of time, do you know, or was that the end of mining there in that city?
I couldn't be positive, but I'm pretty sure that was the end of it.
Yeah.
And the site itself really... has no markers. I mean, if you were driving through town, you wouldn't hardly notice it, except that, you know, it's kind of to the side and there's large mounds of, I suppose, remnants when they were mining. But that's about it.
Horrible.
It is horrible. November 13th will be the anniversary, and they have a little ceremony, you said, every year?
They usually have some kind of just sort of a remembrance. But I don't really think a lot of, like, the survivors, the family members are around. Some are, but not a whole lot. I imagine they either moved back home or went to live with family elsewhere.
Well, that was 107 years ago, so.
I am just embarrassed that I am born and bred here and never heard of this before until today.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, you know that the gentleman who wrote the book, he also, you probably are familiar with Starved Rock. He also wrote a book about the murders at Starved Rock.
Oh, yeah?
He's kind of a good historian of this area.
We should get him on.
Let's get him on. All right.
We'll book him as a guest. Susan, thank you for
the
info.
Susan.
Sure, you're welcome.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, let's get him. I didn't
have
know.
A good day after all this tragedy.
Well, I'm looking forward. You're looking back. I'm looking forward.
There were murders at Starved Rock?
Yeah. The Starved Rock murders.
Yeah, the famous ones.
I'm serious. I went there with a family vacation. I think that's the year we all wore red gym shoes. I didn't know about no stinking murders.
You went on a family vacation to Starved Rock?
And everyone in the family...
We didn't make a lot of money, okay?
No, but I mean, did you stay there or did you just
No, I think we just went for the day.
Okay.
And everyone in the family wore red gym shoes.
Yeah, maybe that's that was in New... Is there a New Holland, Michigan or something?
Yeah, there's a Holland, Michigan.
Yeah, where all their... You get wooden shoes and stuff.
Yeah, but they're not red.
No, we had red Keds on. The whole family did.
That's the second worst thing that ever happened to Starved Rock.
And you say I didn't have good family vacations?
No, that one was a good, that was a great one. All right, we'll take a break. And then after Steve's news, we're going to talk to a 102-year-old woman that was recently arrested. Crazy story.
I cannot wait to talk to her.
What could she have done? 102 years old. What could this woman have done to get her handcuffed and arrested?
Her.
Shame on her is right, Wendy. We'll meet her right after Steve's news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
WGN.
Listen to this, everybody. Edie Sims is 102 years old. Seems like a nice enough lady. Lives in Missouri. Seems to be enjoying life to its fullest. But the other day, Edie Sims, 102 years old, Edie Sims is handcuffed, put in the back of a squad car, and arrested. What? Why? Edie joins us on the phone right now.
What'd you do, Edie?
Edie, what did you do?
Well, that's what they asked me, but I didn't know that we were going to have an Edie Sims Day down at the where they prepare Meals on Wheels program. But we had a wonderful time.
You had a wonderful time getting arrested?
And I got hugged and kissed, and my bucket never runs dry. There's always 16 projects going on in my bucket list.
So this was part of your bucket list to get arrested and handcuffed?
Well, I didn't exactly know it was going to be in handcuffs, but then we the police department and I managed it in handcuffs. That was great.
Edie, why do you think you've always had the desire? You've been on the planet over 100 years, 102 years. Why the desire to be arrested, do you think?
Something I hadn't done before.
You were too good. You were a good girl.
Well, yes, as far as the police knew.
So would you say, Edie, that this experience was all that you thought it would be, getting put in a police car, being arrested? Is it what you imagined?
Well, they read me my rights and put the handcuffs on me, and away we went.
Did
in
you
a squad car?
Did you get fingerprinted at all, Edie?
Huh?
Did you get fingerprinted? Did they take your fingerprints?
No, they did. They didn't do that. I don't think they do that anymore because the ink rubs off on everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get a?
They didn't fingerprint me.
All right. What about a mug shot?
No, but
mugshot.
I've been fingerprinted before because I worked for a savings and loan, and we had to go through all of the FBI things with the fingerprints. But I've been fingerprinted before.
Wow, you've done everything in your 102 years. What else is on your bucket list that you have accomplished?
Well, if I can keep on going, I'll participate in a bazaar here at our retirement center, and I will make Christmas stockings for everybody.
Oh, what a nice thought that is. That's so nice.
Well, some people don't have anybody to even give them a kind word.
Oh.
But I go around patting them, yes.
I'm curious. Now, the police officers who arrested you, and keep in mind, you wanted to be arrested. This was on your bucket list. But did they feel a little bit guilty arresting a kind woman like yourself? Did they feel a little bit of guilt?
No. I just took it a grain at a time, and we had a wonderful time. I hugged the police officers, and they hugged me.
What a sweet story.
And now they have a file on you, I bet.
Well, you have to reach out and touch and pat somebody on the shoulder because maybe nobody has spoken to them that day.
Oh, that's true.
That's true. In any walk of life, even at a retirement center or a nursing home, the poor little things, they just be there.
Yeah.
And it stinks
and
not...
Some of them don't even know where they are, and maybe they care. Maybe they don't have mind enough to know that they're not at home.
Well, your mind is very strong. You're 102 years old, and you sound like a spring chicken.
Well, not that springy.
What do you attribute your longevity to? Have you had a clean life?
Well, I'm a cancer survivor. I survived cancer when I was 40 years old. I wasn't married till I was 33 because there wasn't anybody to marry. They was all over Europe fighting.
Sure. And then you found the right guy and you got married. Good for you.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And it's a good story. And then I have been asked to go out to American Baptist University out from St. Louis and talk to their history classes about 100 years of remembering.
Oh,
what a great honor.
That is an honor. Edie, what would you say in all the years you've been on the planet, 102 years, what has been the most astonishing thing? Did something get invented or something happen that forever you'll just go, that's the most amazing thing I ever saw?
I was amazed that my husband wanted to marry me. he was out there in the Atlantic chasing submarines, and the submarines was chasing them. And then when he came home and I was introduced to him, we got married.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's fantastic.
What about technology? Do you have an iPhone? Do you FaceTime with anyone?
Well, technology is wonderful. And technology, the poor doctors in the World War II found out so many things about people so they could, when the peace was declared, they could help the ones that needed help.
You sound like just such a wonderful woman. Did you eat well throughout your life? Did you ever have bacon? Did you ever have a shot of whiskey?
Oh, yeah, I've tried it all.
Yep. Yep. Why not?
Some of it I didn't like. And when we used to go out, I could make a glass of white wine last me the whole evening, and the rest of them was getting looped, drinking all the hard stuff.
Sure.
So it sounds like you did whatever you want, but in moderation. You didn't overdo anything.
I tried not to.
Yeah.
Unless you call it sewing. I have a sewing machine that is maybe 100 years old, almost 100 years old.
Really?
And it still sews beautifully.
Wow.
That's amazing.
When are you going to be 103?
When what?
When is your 103rd birthday? When's your birthday?
September the 25th. You can tell what my folks were doing on Christmas before that.
Yep.
25th birthday.
We did the math. We can tell. Edie, it's such an honor to talk to you and to meet you. And, you know, when we first heard the story of a 102-year-old woman being arrested by the police, everybody got angry. We thought, you can't arrest a lady like that. But your story is a great one.
Several of the people here did understand it. And they said, what's she done now?
And it sounds like you have a wonderful sense of humor, Edie. And that's been good for you as well.
Well, I try. I can make friends. I can talk to anybody.
Oh, that's so perfect.
I have never been to Hawaii. I have been to Alaska, and I've made 4 trips to Europe. And I didn't have a problem with the language. I just carried a few $1 bills in my pocket, and I got whatever I wanted.
That's fantastic. Are you hoping that Hawaii happens at some time? You still got a chance. You can go to Hawaii. It's beautiful there.
Well, yeah, Hawaii is a bit like Florida because I lived 40 years in Florida with an asthmatic husband, and I'd like to go to Hawaii. I'd like to see Pearl Harbor, and I'd like to see the volcano up there.
There's a lot to see and do.
Yeah, but if I don't get there, I can see it on TV.
Yep, so true.
What a great attitude you have.
Yep. Edie,
well, I try.
Again, it's so nice to talk to you, and what a great story this is. Don't get arrested again, okay? Do us that one favor. You've already done it once. There's no reason for you to return and go back to jail.
Let's not do it again.
Let's
but,
not.
Oh, we had so much fun, and all the police, there was a more than just the one that arrested me. There was a whole bunch of police officers. And I'm glad to see that women are employed by the police department. Women can do anything if you just give them a chance.
There's a woman running for president, Edie. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, I was a Rosie the Riveter back during the war. We riveted things.
Yep.
Ships.
I was a Rosie. But wow. Then there were lots of Rosies because the men was all fighting and we women had to do the best we could with what was left over.
And run the country. Good for you.
And run for, yeah. This is great.
Are your kids still around? Grandkids? Do you have somebody who should record some of these stories and write a little book about you? Because really, some wonderful stories you could share with everyone.
Well, I wrote a story, 100 Years of Remembering, and I've done it out at Missouri Baptist University and had a wonderful time. Well, I got patted and pictured, and that was great.
Fantastic. Very inspirational. Edie, have a great rest of the year and keep it coming. You're an inspiration to all of us. You really are.
Yep. Let's keep it going.
Absolutely.
Give women a chance.
Yep.
Give them a chance.
I'm with you.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks,
Thank
Edie.
Thank you for calling.
Absolutely. Thank you for answering. Take care. Bye.
Yeah.
That's Edie Sims, yeah. 102 years old.
Oh, my God. I want to be her best friend.
Yeah. She's a nice lady.
And when she doesn't finish her wine, I will finish
it. Sure. That's what friends do. All right. We'll take a quick break. And then 106-year-old guy. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. You just met Edie Sims. She's 102 years old. She got arrested the other day, handcuffed, put in the back of a police cruiser, hauled off to jail. Why? Because she's always wanted to be arrested. It was on her bucket list. That's why.
What a sweet woman.
So nice.
And the only thing left on her bucket list, it sounds, is to go to Hawaii. And, Steve, you have a good idea.
Yes, I wanted to start a FundMe.
Like a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter?
Yeah, to be able to send her to Hawaii. I think that would be awesome.
Boy, would that be nice, wouldn't it?
You know, I asked her if she had any kids or grandkids, and I don't know if she has to have some living family members around.
I would imagine. I would hope. Now, as we pointed out, she got married later in life. She said she got married in her mid-30s, so it's possible she may not have children of her own. But, yeah, I would think there's probably nieces or nephews or somebody in
great
the family.
Great nieces or great nephews.
Yeah.
I would love to send her to Hawaii.
That was one of her bucket lists that she was saying that she had never done.
The last remaining one.
I would really love to see that.
Mm.
I have an idea. Why don't you and I go to Hawaii and take her? Steve, you can come with.
Steve, you want in?
Oh, that would be great. I would love that.
All right. On the GoFundMe page, we'll stress the fact that it would be Molly who's going, but she can't go by herself.
Edie,
I'm sorry.
Who's Molly?
I don't know.
Are you going to do Molly with Edie?
No, you know what it is? Honestly, her last name is Sims, and you and I were talking about the show Las Vegas, and the girl on Las Vegas' name is Molly Sims. So
a little insight into what goes on in Bill's brain.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird connections going on there.
All right, well, Steve, I don't know if we can start it. There are so many people. If you go to GoFundMe right now, you will give your whole paycheck away to these sad sob stories. Terrible things, wonderful things.
This one's not sad. This would be a happy story, we hope. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll look into it, Steve. We would like to see this happen.
Yes, definitely. I would love to see her go.
It would be nice.
Love to see her have a good time.
All right.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks,
we appreciate that. See, Steve's helping other people like Edie was doing. Always be nice to someone.
Right.
And now we go to another Steve. This is Steve number two. How are you?
Good, guys. You know, I missed a little bit of the conversation you had with her.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, did you say anything to her about the Cubs? Last time they won was 108 years ago.
Well, she lives in St. Louis, so my guess is she's a Cardinals fan, and I didn't want to upset her by mentioning how well the Cubs are doing.
Oh, okay. Because that'd be something that you could put on her bucket list.
Right.
Get her over here because it's been 108 years.
That's true. That would also be nice.
You guys, she did not sound like she was 102 years old. We've often talked about this.
Didn't. No, she sure didn't. She's pretty sharp, let me tell you.
I'm not that sharp, and I'm half her age.
Oh, none of us are. We're all down. We're all in the fourth quarter, believe me.
Thanks for cheering us up, Steve.
Have a good one.
Yesterday at this time, we were talking about a survey that they asked people if they wanted to live to be 100, and you said no very, very quickly.
I said if I was in my right mind.
Well, too late.
But if I mean, talking to her, she had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
She got arrested, for gosh sakes, getting her freak on.
Right.
I've never been arrested. Cuff me, officer. You want to frisk me, too?
There's pictures. It shows a bunch of the police force. And she even pointed this out. It wasn't just one squad who came to get her. It's like a whole SWAT team that came to bring her down. But Edie Sims is 102 years old, and you heard her. She said, I would never, ever, if she called you, would you have guessed 102?
No. That's what I mean. If I could be like that at 102.
Yeah, that coherent.
Keep me going.
Great. I know. All right. We will look into the GoFundMe page.
How are we really going to? I don't want to be behind it.
I don't know what it would take to send somebody.
Nothing.
To...
You can put a page together in a second, but that's what I mean. I kind of think her relatives should do
that.
Oh,
I see what you mean.
So maybe we could reach out and say, here's an idea.
Right. Right.
I'll give you the first $100.
Endorsed by us. Yeah.
Unless like we that. Take her with, then we could work on a little promotion.
That would be fun. All right.
Edie hits the 50th state.
All right. That's an idea.
All right.
We'll take a quick
over.
Break, and then Ro and Anna will be in. We'll find out what's coming up on their show in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. It's official. I want to live to be over 100 now.
I knew that would happen. Good. Good for you.
I hope you do, too.
I do.
Ro and Anna are here.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
I would like to be very recumbent, though, at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to live the way my life lives now, which is I sleep until everybody's in their place.
Right.
And then I get up and I meander through the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll move about the same way I do 50 years from now as I am currently, sort of slowly, everything kind of a little hurting. And I get back and I watch that young Anderson Cooper.
Right.
I don't know. What's so bad about that?
Nothing's
you
wrong
gotta
with that.
You've got to have your right mind. And that our last guest, 102 years old, still had a sense of humor. If
I
that
love
can
that.
Be happening. Count
why
me in.
Not? Yep.
Yeah, you better have a sense of humor about this joint. I'm going to tell you that right now. When I say this joint, I mean the planet Earth.
Yeah, I know.
You better have a sense of humor about it.
Especially right now, it seems. You got to have stuff to laugh about.
I don't think it's that funny, quite honestly.
Well, yeah.
You got to make yourself laugh after absorbing it, I find. I feel like it gets so heavy on the
sure.
brain, you know?
Yeah.
Just everything going on in politics, et cetera, in the world.
I feel like Roberto Benigni in that movie where he's the clown at the concentration camp.
Wonderful
you know, sort of,
life.
It's kind of the way I'm.
Right.
I'm going to be the clown at the Trump concentration camp with my potato in my hand, and I'm going to make people laugh, and, you know, that's what I'm going to do.
Oh, sad.
All right, coming up on the program.
Boy, that's sad. Right there.
Yeah. That was funny, wasn't it? No? Yeah. Okay.
No one's going to laugh at you.
Problem. Anyway,
wow.
Where
was
I?
Did he deduct your salary and his taxes, though? How does that work? I don't know if you will or not.
I don't have to worry about my taxes at that point because in the Trump concentration camp, you don't have to pay taxes there either, okay?
Oh.
That's how you're really going to enjoy it.
Oh, that'll be
because
fun.
Because you're smart.
Will he pay for your potato?
Yeah, the government pays for the potato. The one potato I get a month. And the health care is basically the same. Hey, but speaking of health care, it appears that that's what's going to be on the docket. We're getting a little bit of guidance about the kind of questions. And unlike when Lester Holt had to keep all the questions in a mayonnaise jar in Funkin' Wagnalls Farm, this is like a real, like everybody's like knowing what this is because they figure this isn't like stumping the guys like with Trump.
No,
right?
these are adept politicians who have histories and lots of debate experience and political experience.
They get some sort of an advance on what the topics will be?
They won't get the questions, but you get an idea. And they do have – it's going to be limited. And it's going to be very, very dense in terms of policy. That's the theory on this because these guys are both wonks.
I think
it's
going to be
kind of fun.
Boring, to be honest.
It's going to be really boring.
I think wonky is fun? I don't know what that's all about.
I'm going to watch it anyway, but I still think it'll be boring. Comparatively,
I love watching Mike Pence do that earnest grin that he's got, right? Who was that? Was wasn't that a guy in Hee Haw? Ernest Grimm.
Ernest Grimm was.
Yeah, Ernest Grimm, where he sits there and he clenches his chin. You know, Donald Trump is just the smartest, best businessman I have ever met. A great family man.
Sure.
Honorable and all that. And he does this whole thing and his head tilts and it's like he's selling me a reverse mortgage is how I feel.
And then his thought bubble says, please don't strike me down now, God. That's so true, Wendy.
Right. I'm only lying for the betterment of you because he told me that we are going to get rid of the Johnson Amendment. And that is basically what it is. So we'll see. Brett Baer is going to be, he's there right now in Farmville.
Cool.
Virginia, where this is all taking place. And you know what they did? You know who made a mistake today? Can I just say this really quickly? I know Judy's like,
who did?
Excuse me, we have news. But there, you know who made a mistake? CNN. They did like College Game Day. They put their set up out in like the quad of this college.
I saw that.
And they've got people, and this is Virginia. They got people like fighting with each other in back of them about, you know, Trump and Clinton waving signs and you know, homemade sign with like a, there's one with like a piece of like a rake through it and like a straw. And you're like, oh, what's going on here? Mm. And I'm like, this is, you know, listen, it's really fun when it's Alabama, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not fun when it's like this. This is not the time for that kind of theatrics. There's someone's going to get hurt out there because, you know, Baldwin and Berwin or whatever their name is, Berman
and Baldwin
are sitting there are like, hey, you know, it's not like having, you know, Lee Corso out there putting a like a Trump head on.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So
speaking of hurt, we got to talk about that clown thing, that creepy clown appearances across the nation. Weird stuff going on.
We got also a pair of tickets to go see Monty Python, the Holy Grail and John Cleese live.
Pretty cool.
For that. So stay tuned for that.